very fragile.
John with Drew and Leslie, get the shit on. Interracial John, shut the fuck up and listen. Interracial John, interracial John, interracial shit motherfuckers, shut up and listen. Drew and Leslie, interracial John.
Shut the fuck up and listen. Shut the fuck up and listen, motherfuckers.
Welcome to the Interracial Drone Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by one very white guy.
And you are very white indeed. What's going on, babe?
I'm doing okay.
That's wonderful. Well, if this is your first time joining us, welcome. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John, that's J-A-W-N, or you can go directly to our website, interracialjohn.com. Please do subscribe wherever you are listening. That helps us out. We also are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, and Periscope at Interracial John, again, J-A-W-N. And we love feedback. You can leave us feedback a bunch of different ways. You can
please
leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher, and if it's 5 stars, we'll read it here on the air. You can also email us, interracialjohn@gmail.com, and easiest of all, you can pick up your phone, dial 657-JOHNERS, that's 657-JAWNERS, and if it's under 3 minutes and not totally ridiculous, we'll play it here on the air. Shout out to the Black Guy Who Tips, Rod and Karen, for our general feedback rules, and shout out to them as well for having us on the show this week.
And I'm not trying to
welcome to all the TBGWT listeners.
Yeah, I don't want to jump ahead. I'm not trying to like talk out of school and spoil shit, but there's a sponsor for this show, right? Like,
there is.
The first time ever someone is sponsoring this show.
Yes.
Have you given a review? What have you done?
What have
given,
you given a five-star?
There's some. I know there's some. The Faithful 14 are there.
Yeah.
There could be more. There That's all be. I'm saying.
Yeah, we could be That's the Faithful
30. We don't ask for a lot.
Anyways.
And if you knew how much we ask the sponsor for, you know how much we really don't ask for a lot. You can give a review.
You can give a review. So we do have some emails.
We do.
We have a
some
couple of emails. Mm-hmm. This one, the subject, you guys rock.
I agree. Okay. I concur.
Says, Dear Drew and Leslie, I discovered you guys a few months ago via an excellent TBGWT episode. Shout out to Rod and Karen. And I've been listening to you regularly ever since. Just wanted to say how much I enjoy the show. It's such a great combination of laughs and learning. You're both hilarious, and the interplay between you is even greater than the sum of the parts.
Well, thank you very much.
Especially when you get down to discussions that really bring the light to light the difference in black versus white perspectives on race issues. Really good stuff. Oh. Leslie, your Facebook feed is positively amazing, though it can be challenging just to keep up with such a never-ending stream of stories of white fuckery. Ain't that the truth?
Your Facebook is rife with white fuckery.
It is. Incredible. Drew, as a fellow white guy, I really appreciate the wisdom you offer to the rest of us trying to navigate race issues while trying to minimize the damage we do to the ignorance that most of us have learned and need to unlearn through the years of white privilege. A couple of notes on recent episodes. All right.
Feedback.
The Texas A&M outreach to women's sports fans. Oh, my God. The fuck. I looked up the article after hearing you talk about it, and damn, I could have sworn those PowerPoint slides were something out of the Onion. Un-fucking believable. Actually, nope. Totally believable.
I agree with them. When you see the slides, it's like, you wrote that? Like, that was what you put up on that? Like, this is for a women's thing? Like, good
and
Lord.
And the thing is, those dudes don't know how to do PowerPoint. Some like,
an intern. Get underneath the center and spread your legs.
That's what you want me to write,
Coach? Keep it tight.
Write it down! Anyways.
Spread your legs!
Anyways, keep up the good work. I'll be writing you a 5-star review shortly. You guys are awesome. P.S. The Pittsburgh Steeler with the trunk full of weed was Bam Morris.
Oh, it was a Steeler. I knew it was a Steeler.
And the things in your ear that affect balance, I think, are the semicircular or semi-cochlear canals.
He's right.
At least that's what I remember from my 4th grade report I did on the ear. Cheers, John. Yeah. Well, thank you, John, for all of that.
You missed a sentence. He said the Reggae Fest story was on.
Right. The Reggae Fest story was also dead on. I've been to a couple of blues festivals that were also like 80% rich white people. Sigh.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad.
Especially in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know.
It's just disturbing. On the south side. We weren't like on the North Shore in Evanston or something. Anyways,
I'll read the next one. Subject, I heart.
No, I read these.
All the emails. Do I go back and forth?
You
please
read
go
the,
ahead.
I never read
go
the five
ahead,
star reviews.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Subject, I heart Dr. Amin. Oh, so do we. Hi, Leslie and Drew. I love the episode with Dr. Amin. Shout out to a fellow black girl with a PhD. I never want to be a professor because I don't want to deal with the male egos and white privilege that will bombard me. I can only imagine the number of confrontations I would have with students who swear they know a subject better than I do with my doctoral degree in mechanical engineering. Especially since I went to a public university for my degrees, and one of those universities was an HBCU. Shock and horror. I can't tell you how many times a guy ghosted me after they found out my background and profession. Although I love dropping it in on random strangers, read white people, at parties who are talking down to you, to me. Nothing stops them in their tracks faster than when I answer the question. So what do you do with, I'm an aerospace engineer, a.k.a. rocket scientist, bitch.
I love kids.
I added the bitch. She didn't
you know, I know, but you know, I can just see her like, I'm an aerospace engineer,
rocket scientist.
Oh, you work at the down at the. Oh, okay, got it.
What do you do? I'm an actual rocket scientist. The look on their faces is priceless. Outstanding, WC. What are you going to get at brunch? I've been craving some shrimp and grits with a side of bacon, but I doubt the grit making skills in Temecula. I guess we'll have to settle for pancakes. Oh, as always, love the show, y'all. Katisha, aerospace engineer and arch nemesis of Outstanding WC.
I like this John inspired
it's
beef.
Cute. It's
very cute. I wish we could get together for brunch for real somewhere.
Yeah.
Not Temecula.
Yeah, no, definitely not Temecula. Nah, definitely so we do have a sponsor today.
We
our
do.
Very first sponsor. We're very excited to be sponsored today by Culture Chest. And I wanted to talk a little bit. I mean, people have heard me talk on the show a lot about children's literature, YA literature in the last year or so. You know, we had Slavery with a Smile. We had
Step
the hashtag
up Scholastic.
Step Up Scholastic. I've been doing a lot of work in this field. And Culture Chest is, you know, an answer to some of the issues that we have been talking about in terms of diversity and representation in children's literature. And something that I really learned from Debbie Reese, shout out to Debbie, about children's literature is that what it needs to be healthy, is that children's literature is meant to serve as both a window and a mirror. So if it's about somebody like you, it should hold up a mirror and show you something about yourself. And you should be able to relate to it very directly. If it's about
That's the representation.
Correct. If it's about somebody that's not like you, okay, it's supposed to provide a window for you to understand what motivates somebody who is different than you are and to relate to them in a human way.
And an accurate window, not a
correct,
smiling
not a fuck
slave.
Shit window. Yeah. So what happens is when we have poor representation is we have broken mirrors and we have shattered windows and broken mirrors, and it's terrible for everybody. So Culture Chest is really amazing. They're a company that just launched and it's owned by a black woman, so shout out to that sends diverse children's books to your door every month. So each box and each month has a different theme. September's theme is music. So that month, all of the subscribers are going to get three books about music in different cultures. And it caters to children from ages 3 to 8. And again, every month they get 2 to 3 books, all meant to show and elevate diversity. So we're really excited.
Awesome.
You can go to culturechest.com. And if you enter in the code John, that's JAWN at checkout, you'll get 15% off your first box. And you can also follow them on Twitter, and you can follow them on Facebook and on Instagram at culturechest.
Yeah. And I really hope they have success. And I hope Johners check it out. We here at the John household love subscription boxes.
We do.
Not going to lie, we get a lot of them. We don't keep them all. You know, you come on here, do there. But I think they're great gifts. Mm-hmm. You know, you give somebody a 3-month subscription to a box like this. They've got a new child or somebody in their life. That's really great.
It's a great gift to give, because for a child, like, you're not bombarding the parents with like a bunch of stuff at once. They'll get something, you know,
couple
every
months
month
in a row.
And
yeah.
They can, you know, share the books around. I think it's really smart, and I think it's a great thing to do, not just for children of color, but for white children, to give them those windows, accurate windows, healthy windows, so that they can relate to their classmates that are people of color in much more meaningful ways and not be caricatures. You know, the little girl Margaret Farley that did that, you know, 1,000 black girl books. You know, she was interviewed. She said, why did you want to do this? She goes, because every book I ever pick up has a white person or a dog as a protagonist. And I'm never there. So please, if you're having those same concerns about the content that your children are reading, check out Culture Chest. And we're really excited to have them as our very, very, very first official sponsor of the show. And we're going to be getting a box. So that'll be exciting to open and see what we get in September. So that's pretty cool.
So we had a bit of a week or so here. Had some fun things.
We did.
There's a Sur La Table that opened up. And
I'm about to move into, apparently.
We took a French cooking class. Jacques Pepin. And I like the soup. The soup we did
made
was super
tomato
cool.
tomato soup. We did a corn souffle. That was excellent. We had snapper with olive tempanade. And we had peaches Marty, which I have to say I really enjoyed.
That was a good little date night.
Really fun.
And I don't know what it is about Saturday in this
Saturdays
fucking
in this
house.
Fucking town.
And I don't want to, in case people listen, I don't want to be like, you know, say it was ruined or anything. But our Saturday plans have not been ours for quite a few Saturdays in a row.
It's been going left a lot.
A lot. Mm-hmm. And had a friend that got very, very sick and we had to babysit and do some other stuff. It was okay. It was fun. Got to spend time with my boy.
Right. And it's not a problem with doing the thing. It just, like, again, our plans just got to do
it. Yeah, just so many Saturdays in a row.
We had thought we were going to do a couple in a row, so that was great.
You can't win on Saturday.
And then also that day.
Tornado.
Five tornadoes touched down here in Grand Rapids. And I said to Dr. Miss Smoothestache, who is completely obsessed with the weather.
Oh, he's NOA for life.
Do you guys have these often? He goes, no, we never have them. We don't have circular storms like that here, mostly due to the lake and also where we're positioned next to Canada. And we move and here come the fucking random tornadoes. I think we're bad luck.
We moved to New Jersey and we're like, oh yeah, New Jersey's great. They don't get hurricanes. They don't get fucking earthquakes. They got no natural disasters. With the 4 years we were there, there was like Hurricane Sandy, Hurricane Irene, like shit fucked up the entire East Coast. New York got flooded. Long Island got ruined. New Jersey was out of power for fucking like a week where we lived. Like it was like, what the fuck? Like I thought this shit never happened. Like too late, like August, September, Atlantic hurricanes that made it all the way up to fucking New York, New Jersey. Like that never happens. It hasn't happened since.
No.
And then there was the earthquake, the DC earthquake that we felt.
It shook our house.
It shook the house. I were like, what is that? Why are you shaking? I'm like, that's an earthquake. We ran out the house. Like, the fuck was that? We move here and there's a fucking earthquake and two hurricanes.
It's ridiculous.
And now we come to Grand Rapids and there's the first tornadoes.
Fucking ridiculous.
I'm waiting for some fucking, like, you know, a glacier to form on top of us or something. Really just like, I don't know what could be the worst possible thing. The Leonid meteor shower fucking destroys Grand Rapids. Seemed to be focused on the home of Drew and Leslie.
Mm-hmm. Directly on top of us.
Right on top of us. Trying to fucking kill us, man.
So I wanted to talk a little bit. You know, we go to couples therapy.
I wasn't exactly loving that this was on the list. Like, I'm maybe part of that shame. You know, like, I don't want to... I'm not wanting to talk about it. I don't think it's like, oh my God, you're a couple's there. Like, we've been married 15 years. Like, okay. Like, going for a tune-up, that's not the end of the world, right?
Yeah, I think that the reason why I was going to talk about it is actually talking about it in my Black Women Think Tank group, a group of Black women that I converse with and commune with. And we share, you know, really personal stuff. It's very small. I think there's only like 20 of us in it or something. And I, you know, therapy is therapy. For those of you that go know what I mean when I say that. And I had just asked them, you know, are any of you in therapy, couples therapy? And if you are, do you have those sessions where you leave and it's like worse than when you went in? Because sometimes you, like, you know, unearth uncomfortable things or you're trying to work through a tense, you know, conflict or whatever. So sometimes you don't get out of there feeling all like, woohoo, therapy. So I just posed that question and it was really interesting having the talk. Quite a few of the women, I'd say probably half, were like, yep, I go every week or I go every month or it's pretty regular for us. And we like to make sure we put the time in for the relationship. And, you know, people had different reasons for starting it and how long they've been doing it. But quite a few people were like, you know, my husband thinks it's, you know, Black people don't talk about stuff like that or we don't do that or, you know, he's reluctant or I didn't even think it was something that is stuff that people do really unless there's big problems and da 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 da. So I thought it would be good to talk about just because I think it would be good to kind of remove that particular stigma. One that, you know, therapy is bad, and two, that, you know, couples therapy is something that is only meant when things are difficult. I think that it would be much healthier to foster environments where couples are able to get communication in particular tight in with professional help. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there's definitely, you know, I would say the things that we're dealing with in couples therapy aren't new. It probably could have, like, you know, could have been dealt with sooner with some, I wouldn't say like professional help, but like you said, having a an appropriate and safe space and a, you know, for lack of a better word, a neutral mediator to be able to ensure that things are being understood and framed and sort of, you know, processed by each party fully and properly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, there's a little bit of a stigma. Like, you feel a little bit of like a failure, like, oh, we got to go to couples therapy. And I think that there's, I don't know, you know, I can only talk about me and our experience. You know, I feel like sometimes it's a little bit, I don't know, like overly focused on me. I feel like I'm the problem in the marriage more. But
well, I don't think we have to talk about all of that if you don't want to. You can. I just was, you know, that wasn't my intention. I was more just talking about like conceptually, like, you know, how after 15 years of marriage and going to therapy this far into our marriage, you know, what do you think, looking back, could we have been doing better with it sooner? Could we have benefited from
Oh yeah.
Just, I mean, you know, that's what I really, yeah. That's what I got from my conversation with the women is like that, you know, it's like a pound of prevention or a pound of cure.
No, I refer to it as accumulating marital debt.
Right.
Right. Like, so there's, you know, these tiny things that maybe, you know, aren't that big a deal, but you don't think it's a big deal. And then maybe you have a coping mechanism and you figure out a coping mechanism or whatever you're doing. It's not a big deal, but it's still there, kind of like, I don't say festering, but mm-hmm. it's just like, you know, a 100,000 tiny little things end up now being a big problem.
Right.
And I think not having the tools to be able to maybe resolve and address tiny little things and, you know, understand when things are, you know, becoming a problem.
And I also think that, like, you know, if you're in it for the long haul, you know, you should understand that you're going to change, your partner's going to change. And I think therapy can kind of keep you both still connected through those changes too. I feel like you can, you know, you may not be struggling or anything, but it just gives you, a specific time, date, and platform to have concerted focus on your connection to each other, and your communication, so that it's clear, you know, how you each are feeling.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on, how you can communicate better with each other and understand each other better. So I think I just wanted to mention all of those things in case anybody was thinking about it or thought it wasn't for them. That it's beneficial, and I think, you know, more people should do it for sure if you can. We are lucky enough to have an amazing guest on the show today. Beauty Jackson is with us, Mel from The Good and Terrible Show. I'm really excited. She's been on the show before, and I think she has some really exciting news for us that we're going to be breaking here on the show. So let's go ahead and grab her and get the show started. And we are back. We are so excited to welcome back to the show one Beauty Jackson. Mel, what's going on? We're so happy to have you here.
I'm happy to be here. Hey.
Yeah, please clap. Let's get a please clap.
Yes. Is that my Jeb Bush?
It is. Forever. I'm going to play that for a million fucking years.
I feel like that's what he's going to eventually just be known for, is that please clap.
Please clap.
Yeah.
I'm here for educational policy. Please clap. It's just handing out turtles.
It's scary because he's the smart Bush.
Exactly. That's the frightening one. Part of the whole thing. Well, if you have been living under a rock and don't know who our guest is today, she describes herself as a mother of champions, words, ideas, podcasts, dreams, and dragons. And she is, you know, one of the most brilliant black women you can follow on Twitter. She also is one of the co-hosts of The Good and Terrible Show on the Cole Slither Podcast Network. And we're just so happy to have her here. You can follow her on Twitter and Instagram at @beauty_Jackson. And, you know, of course, we'll have all the links, all the stuff on the show notes for this week. But what's up with you, Mel? What's going on?
I don't sleep anymore. I'm doing too many things.
Ooh, sorry.
I'm doing all the things. It's in a good way, though.
Right.
It's in a good way. The network is growing. CSPN is growing. We've got our sports show, which is my baby, that just turned a year. And that's and I say my baby as in this was, you know, me. And then, you know, it's like, look what we're, I mean, obviously Good and Terrible is one of my babies, and that's my first baby. But this one was kind of all me at the beginning. Mm. And so, and it's kind of me, you know, watching that grow into something that was like really just a concept of, can I do this? Because I'm, you know, I'm conversational about sports, but you know, I'm not an expert. And so I managed to get these really smart people together, and they're doing a really, really awesome thing. So that's what's happening. The Good and Terrible Show, which is my first baby, is on hiatus. Me and my co-parent, Siege, we're taking a little break. And we've taken a lot of breaks in 2016. I think our audience is sick of us. And it's just been one of those years. When y'all talk about getting in your 30s, 39 is a bitch. If anybody ever wonders what like your late 30s are, 39 is a real fucking bitch. So I'm cussing up a storm. So
I love the fucking cussing. So keep it up.
So it's so you know, there have been a lot of breaks. There's been a lot of ups and downs. And, but it's fall and I am in just this creative mind space. And so many of our podcasts, so many of the podcasts and so many things that I'm involved with, we do a lot of ranting. We do a lot of talks about social issues as well. We should. There's definitely a place for that, especially in this climate. But we don't have enough, I don't think, spaces to really talk about the things that truly bring us joy. And especially as women, Black women, even when we have those shows that are very happy and upbeat, we still, there's so many things that go on where we have to, interject with all the bullshit that's surrounding us.
Yep.
And so, and we do it on Good and Terrible, and we do it a lot, but I really wanted a space that was separate from that. Mm-hmm. I wanted something that was completely separate from that. And so, drum roll, and you guys are basically getting a scoop here because I have not even put out the press release yet. But I am, while we're on hiatus at the very least, working on a solo project. It is a podcast that is launching on August 29th, Monday, and it's called Super Luscious.
Super Luscious, all right.
Luscious.
Nice. And, you know, you maybe you might have used the acronym, you know, CSPN, and you kind of like talked about it. But tell our listeners just a little bit more about the Cold Slither Podcast Network and, mm-hmm. and what it is and what you guys do and how many other shows are on it. And because it's kind of cool, I guess.
We've got, I think, 10 shows now. Hmm. We actually are, we're in conversations with a few other people. So we're going to have more shows by the end of October. We'll probably grow by 3 or 4 shows. Hmm. My partner, co-founder, Classic, is tired of me because he does most of the sound editing, but he's also really exciting. I mean, excited. We're both very excited to see the growth. It started out, it originally started out as Cold Slither Podcast, and it was a bunch of dudes. It was a bunch of nerdy Black guys who would get together with their friends and talk about, nerd shit. it came from the group, from G.I. Joe, the Cobra group, Cold Slither.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
I didn't even get that. Yes. I literally didn't even get that. That's so dope. Fucking, yes. That's like a G.I. Joe in joke. Nice.
Exactly.
And like a Cobra one. Really nice.
We do all the things. We're doing all the things over there. And so what ended up, so as once the podcasts, they come and they go. I mean, it can be a
flighty
business, especially when you're doing it as a hobby.
Don't we all?
Shit happens. And then interests diverge. Even if this is something that you want to do, sometimes when you have a group, a collective, your interests on where you want to go in the podcast, those things can just kind of part ways.
Yeah.
And so, some of the co-hosts kind of left behind, you know, Cold Slither and left it with Classic. And so he was like, I want to do something more with this. And we were doing, when 24 resurfaced, 2 years ago, 2014. Yeah. 'Cause that's when I moved to Pittsburgh. He was doing a recap. We were doing recaps for that. And right as 24 was ending, CJ and I were talking about doing the Good and Terrible show, and we literally knew nothing as far as the production sound aspect of things. And so I started talking to him, and he was like, well, you know, this is what I'm trying to do. And we started talking more about what his vision was for Cold Slither and how he wanted it to be more than a podcast. And after I got bitten by the podcasting bug, I knew that I wanted to be more than a podcaster. I knew that I could be part of sparking a movement. And so we really got into looking for people, looking for new voices. And there were just kind of these podcasts, some of them that started, they were just kind of already out there, and they needed a home. So then we get Crown and Collards, and then we get Bad Advice Show. Comic Book Chronicles was already under that Cold Slither umbrella. So we had them. So you've got, what's that, like four right there. You had Classic Team Up, which was his kind of offshoot production when Cold Slither was in limbo. So you've just got all these things converging together. And before you know it, we've got five shows. And then we've got six shows. And then we've got 10 shows. And part of my idea was to change the conversation in media and how we talk about things. We can talk about these things that are controversial. We can talk about these things that are irreverent. Like, we can do that, but how can we do it without hurting people?
Right.
And that has been my goal. I feel like you can say pretty much whatever you want. And that's, you know, one of the things when I talk to people about new shows, I'm not going to censor what you say, but we have an audience to consider. And I want you to consider how you say it, because there are certain things that we're just not, you know, going to allow. There are definitely times where we're recording shows and I'll hear certain things, and sometimes we'll, you know, people slip up, and lots of us have bigotry here or there. And I understand that, but it's not going to make it on my network.
Right.
Yeah. And so that was our, and Classic is in line with me on that. So it's a blessing to have a partner like that. The same for the Good and Terrible show. Siege is in line with that. It's a blessing to work with two people who are in this business, where making a name for yourself, infamy is a really easy way to make a name for yourself. And we don't want to go that cheap route. And so that was basically the foundation from which all things sprung. And we've just continued to attract people who have those same values, that same principle.
Right.
One of the other things that I've really made it my mission to do, when I started realizing, I mean, a lot of things, it's a boy's game, you know, media is still a boy's game. And so I realized that there will be a lot of times where I am one of a few black women in the room, maybe the only black women in the room. And I don't want to be the special snowflake. I want to bring other black women with me. So a lot of my goals have been to find black women with voices and amplify what they want to say. And so we've got our upcoming new shows. All of them have women. They're all women-centered shows, because we have this idea that we have to appeal to everyone and we have to appeal to men. And yeah, that's fine, but women still should have their voices in expressing themselves the way they feel and expressing themselves to other women. So I'm not going to discount having a woman's show. I have a sports show. I produce a sports show. I created a sports show, Know the Score. And originally my vision for that was going to be that it was all women. It did not work out that way. And that's okay, because we also have Gridiron Gals, which is a women's, a football show that is helmed by Rita and Chelsea, the NFL chick, and Chelsea is right on Twitter, and they are two of the most brilliant football minds of any gender you will ever encounter.
Facts.
So it's just we really lucked out in that aspect, but I still make sure, you know, when we have our shows, okay, we need a woman to talk about this. We need to make sure one of our hosts, Jessie, who is just awesome and a sweetheart. She's one of our regular hosts on the show. And then we make sure that we have women guests and talk about it, talk about sports in a way that's not condescending, you know, and so we're going to talk about sports, but we're also going to talk about race, and we're going to talk about sexism in sports. We're going to talk about racism in sports. Nice. It's still keeping it sports centric. Mm-hmm. You can talk about these things and not sacrifice the quality of your message or the content of your show. And so that's been my goal for going on 2 years now. Well, it's 2 years now.
Yeah.
So yeah, we go by CSPN now because we don't want to get sued by Mattel.
Got it. So, good to know.
But we all do it. Like, even because, I mean, Cold Slither is, this is back before there was the Black podcast explosion. So they, you know, they were one of the few. So, you know, it's hard to let that go. But I also like to remind my co-creator that we ain't got no money.
Certainly so. No Mattel money.
No lawsuit money. And I'm not trying to like tell you how to do or what to do. But in my very white experience, the first thing is a cease and desist. And that's kind of like, because legally you can be like, oh, I didn't know. Right, I didn't know. I did. And once you get the cease and desist, then you got to like wipe it from memory. It's done.
Like, yeah, but better not get that.
And that's why we still have allowed room for error. I hope I didn't put anything terrible in the ether by saying that. But at the same time, we've already started like making the moves away from that. And, you know, he'll say certain things and I'm like, it's CSPN, my dude. Mm-hmm. And he'll do the same thing to me. Because we realize, like, if we branded ourselves as Cold Slither, that we were going to have to change when we grew. So we weren't thinking with growth in mind. So when we started doing this, I was like, no, we're going to grow. We're going to be huge. So we might as well do this now.
Bam.
And that is, it's been a crazy ride. I've met some wonderful people. I get to do what I love. And I know I love it because I have a 9-to-5 that is very demanding. And I still make sure that I take care of my media duties because this is the thing that's important. It's important for us to get our voices out there, to get our voices heard.
Yeah.
Folks,
check it out. It's the CSPN. And if you're not familiar with what she's talking about, it's a network. One feed, you get all these shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
So from August, I'm looking at the iTunes feed, from August 16th to the 24th, that's barely a week. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 shows.
Mm-hmm.
So check it out, the CSPN feed, and we'll make sure it's on our list as well. But
we have content almost every day of the week except Saturday, and I believe that's going to be changing in the near future.
Wow.
So we're going to have 7 days of content. I mean, good content. New content 7 days a week, which is amazing to me considering the fact that I'm a legal secretary who at one point just had no idea what I was going to do with my life.
Well, first of all, that's awesome. Congratulations here. On the new show. So excited. Can't wait to listen to it. It's going to be amazing. But one thing that you made me think of is that I'm going to talk when we do the This Week in Hashtags about Black women equal pay day. And one of the things that I was thinking about is how, you know, Black women are the most educated segment of the population. And we also are the largest growing group of entrepreneurs as well, which makes perfect sense because despite our education level, we still find ourselves at the bottom of earning potential in normal, you know, mainstream work settings. So it totally makes sense. We see so many of us going into areas that we get to own the work that we do. We get to be the boss in the areas that we choose to work in, because really it's the only way we've been able to secure consistent, fair, you know, compensation is to make it ourselves. Yeah. You know,
exactly.
It's crazy.
And so that's one of the reasons I would tell anybody, like, you know, the old adage was, you know, you want to work for white people. You want, you know, it's like Black people don't pay you. And I don't know where y'all are from, but working for a black woman like me, or working with a black woman like me, who knows how hard it is to turn over a buck, I'm gonna make sure you get your coins, and I'm gonna make sure you keep your coins. Word. Because I know what it's like to be undervalued, and I never want anyone to walk away from working with me feeling like they weren't valued, because I know how awful that is. So I don't want to project that experience on anyone else.
Agreed. Well said. Well said. So we have some great stuff to get into today, and some stuff that I mentioned on Twitter about Leslie Jones and some other stuff. But let's start with the news, Drew. Let's get going.
The news is coming on. The news is coming on.
I just love that Zoe so much.
It's not Zoe, it's Zizi.
I can listen to it all the time. So the social network Nextdoor is making some moves to try to block racial profiling. And if you're not familiar with the social network Nextdoor, you can only join it by a postcard to your actual address with a code that you put in. So it's it verifies who you are and where you live and that you're actually part of this neighborhood.
Now, I'm going to stop you there, because when you told me about this bullshit a couple years ago, I was like, that sounds like some racial profiling bullshit to me. I don't want any parts of it. Don't put my name on anything and don't sign me up. Isn't that the conversation we had?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And I signed up and I put us on.
You signed up there and you signed up here, right?
I signed up there and they didn't get enough homes in our neighborhood to actually form a. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to go, like, they sent me 20 postcards I had to put in 20 doors.
Oh, you were like spearheading this shit?
Not necessarily, but that's what they want you to do, right?
Oh,
like,
I see.
There's not enough homes in your zip code, you know, here. Like, go fucking get more so you can have an actual network. But anyway, I did sign up here. And I did more honestly to see who was there and what the demographic was. Super white, like straight up.
Which is funny because our neighborhood is not super white, but this next door, you know.
I can tell the black houses probably are 80% of the ones that haven't joined this site, right? I'm dead ass. I'm dead ass.
We ain't giving nobody our address.
I don't want y'all knowing where I am.
No, thank you. So they do have a couple different things that, you know, I'm not saying the site's good or bad, but it's like, you know, this is happening. You know, don't do this. There's a garage sale going on here. You know, little Jimmy's babysitting. Fucking here's a painter. That kind of shit. Like, I need a handyman. Mm-hmm. But so they did have one part that was like kind of prominent, and it was like, I don't say like report suspicious activity, but kind of. You know what I'm saying?
It was report suspicious activity.
Yeah. So it now has, if you're using the race of the individual as a criteria, you have to put two other descriptors, like, you know, shoes, clothing. They're not allowing you to just be like black, right? Like, so that's one thing. And then they're algorithmically doing a few other things to try to eliminate what they think is, you know, would deem racially profiling. Things like overly brief descriptions, you know, like repetitive from the same kind of like person or neighbor, just different shit. They're trying to, like, I don't know, technologically tackle the, like, there's a person breaking into my car. No, it's mine and I fucking lost my keys. The fuck? You know, it's my neighborhood kind of thing, right? The Skip Gates getting harassed in his own fucking home in Harvard, right? So I think it's interesting that they're kind of doing it. But they did face some criticism, you know, like they're doing this not because, like, oh, the goodness of our heart, let's, you know, let's be next door and we're going to be awesome. It was like, no, like, you had this feature that people are like, what's with the racial profiling fucking app on Nextdoor? Like,
well, I think it's interesting only from the standpoint of them trying to actually make a decision about not allowing people to post based on what they're putting in. I don't think I've seen another social network do that. So that's something very interesting.
I agree.
I'm not saying it's going to work, but I think it's interesting just to start a conversation in which a network is deciding to say, hey, you can't post that. Just off the bat because it doesn't meet these criteria or whatever.
I think it's a technological approach to implicit bias, and that's maybe interesting and new. And the CEO is, you know, I don't know from where, but I would say a man of color, but I think of Asian, you know, like, you know, India. I'm not sure his. I don't want to guess his background, but he's not a white presenting dude.
Oh, I see.
The CEO.
The CEO isn't.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he's been racially profiled himself, is what I, you know. So I think he has some personal involvement.
Plus, I also think, like, if his goal with the platform, which is what it seemed, was to build, you know,
true connections.
Take true connections that you can make one to one and use the digital space to enhance that. Allowing racial profiling sort of is the antithesis of that.
Yeah, I mean, the general store and the front porch are gone. You need something.
Because I feel like, I guess it's a way to kind of get to know your neighbors.
That's what it's supposed to be. Like, you would set up, like, you know, block parties or a park, you go to the park at the same time or go jogging or let people know when stuff's going on, like if the lights were going, you know, if the power went out, stuff like that, I think.
Because, I mean, I get it, because when you're in neighborhoods that are mixed but kind of newly mixed, it tends to be it's still segregated, like you're talking to white people, you know, I mean, it automatically happens. So I think it's interesting.
It is. I don't think it'll work, but I think it's interesting.
And I said it was the community, but it's even more, I should say, like aggressive activism. The backstory is that a sustained grassroots campaign in Oakland, California compelled the tech company to act. A group calling Neighbors for Racial Justice met with Nextdoor, handing over a blueprint on how to change the platform, then got city officials to weigh in aggressively. At a hearing last December, city council member Brooks suggested that the company doesn't take steps to stop racial profiling. The city would not permit their employees to continue to post on Nextdoor and validate this behavior. So it was, again, you know, it wasn't the tech company. It was like a community of people being like, the fucker, you know.
I'm
sick of the white neighbor calling on the black neighbor being like, what the fuck? And there, I think there will be, is that in here, that news story, Leslie?
What's the news story?
The young man that got chased.
No, I don't think I might have put it in. Yes, I don't know if I even wanted to talk about it, that poor little boy.
Yeah, but so, yeah, this fucking, you know, like we had a story months and months ago about like even cops are fucking tired of white people calling fucking them on their black neighbors trying to jumpstart their car. Like just stop. Just stop.
Yeah. And I think... I know Nextdoor is like really popular in California, which makes sense because they have a lot of like, you know, cul-de-sac-y type of neighborhoods in California. So I could see that being really prolific there. But I think it's interesting what they're really trying to tackle, what they're trying to address is that, you know, racism itself is something that not everybody agrees when something is racist and when it isn't. And so they're trying to sort of regulate something that, you know, is almost undefinable, certainly from some standpoints, or certainly there's varying opinions about if something is racist or not. But
so they defined it very specifically and broadly, intentionally. And their definition was, let me get to it, anything that like stereotypes an entire population. Where is it here? Working definition is really broad. Anything that allows a person to stereotype an entire race. So
a dark-skinned dude.
Yeah.
That would be.
Yeah. If you're stereotyping an entire race, it's not allowed. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm here for that.
Well, I think it's a place to start for sure. I'll say that. It's more than fucking Twitter's doing. No shade.
Well, you know, you're never going to get people to be like, he was white. And he, you know what I'm saying? Like,
no, because they would just say man. That's the other thing. Is like they don't feel the need for a descriptor when it's a white dude. Because it's like, if I didn't say the race.
Correct.
Yeah. That's definitely true.
I think people are so hesitant to define what racism is because then you're responsible for how someone else's feelings.
Yep.
And that's why I've always thought that people have shied against, you know, wanting to say that something is racist, number one, and being like, oh, the PC police or what? Because then you have to actually address the fact that, yes, you are responsible to a certain extent to how you make people feel with your words, with your actions.
Yep.
And people don't want to have any accountability for their shitty behavior.
You know, there's people at, like the police station, like he was he had like brown eyes, like afro, and was he black? Oh, I didn't even notice.
I didn't know. I didn't see color. Like, get the fuck out of here.
He described like the blackest dude on earth. I didn't even notice.
He was black. Can't believe it.
I don't see color.
It was Idris Elba. Anyway.
Idris the blackest dude on earth?
No, I don't know. He's British and he's black, so I figured I'd pick him.
I'm calling everybody if I see Idris Elba in my neighborhood. Yes. Actually, no, I'm not. Actually,
yeah,
no.
Don't call nobody. Keep that to yourself.
I think I will.
And make him a pie. So
it's been Melanie.
Oh, hey.
The mister.
So I saw this, and this actually happened a couple months ago, but in Indonesia, they approved castration for sex offenders who prey on children. In Jakarta, Indonesia reporting in the New York Times, they say the Indonesian president, Joko Widodo, signed a decree on Wednesday authorizing chemical castration for convicted child sex offenders and requiring those released on parole to wear electronic monitoring devices. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
I have a lot of kids. I'm not against it. I feel that there should be a certain level of responsibility. And while I'm not for the death penalty, but just like there are certain criteria that you have to meet for something like the death penalty. I think that's something, you know, there should be some sort of criteria that you have to meet for that. Mm. But I'm not at all, as far as what you have proved, you know, that, but I don't think I'm against it. I think the way children are failed when it comes down to sexual crimes and abuse, it's beyond criminal. The way they are failed by the system, especially in, you know, countries that are not necessarily as developed. And so I am 100% here for it, especially after reading the story that's kind of spearheaded that movement.
Yep.
One of the things that he said that really touched me was basically on how, you know, kids are being robbed.
Yep.
by these crimes. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely true. You basically take away their right to an innocent childhood. So yeah, I'm that's one of those things I'm just not against. I tend to go ham for kids. Yep. So
I hear you. Drew, what are your thoughts?
I used to be much more, I wasn't a prison abolitionist until probably like the last year, 6-8 months. And when we talk about prison abolition, almost anyone I mention that to right away goes, what about the pedophiles? Right? That's the first thing, because in their mind, that's the most criminal, like, of behavior. It's the worst, most heinous. And even,
which is though, interesting, because it's not prosecuted as such.
Right. But, you know. But even in jail, like if you're a pedophile, you got to be in isolation, because the general population will very much abuse you. You're in jail, you're the lowest of the low. But anyway, I'm of the belief that there are some individuals whose mental illness with regards to pedophilia specifically and their rate of recidivism does not make them compatible with our current society. Mm. And I don't know what that means. Does that mean they need to be isolated? Does that mean they need to be jailed? I don't know. I do know that there are individuals that, in an attempt to lead a healthy life within our current society, under the guidelines of, you know, psychiatrists and other folks, have self-opted, have said, I want the chemical castration. I need to stop these thoughts, and this is a problem, and this is what I want. And, I don't know. I haven't looked at, like, studies as to the, like, success of that. And I don't know what Indonesia approving it means. Mm-hmm. If that means that it's part of a treatment protocol with which the individual patient has some sort of, excuse me, I don't want to say saying it. I don't know. I don't know if forced chemical.
I don't
chemical
think that they do. I think that
forced chemical castration. But again, I don't know. I'm not here for prison.
Well,
I
they're think- making it into part of the punishment. That's what this is. When it says approves, it means like you, instead of just being on probation, you're on probation and you have to take these chemical castration pills and you have to have an electronic monitoring. So it's part of a sentence.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that and you bring up a good point, and the other thing, like the other side of that, while I'm not against it, I do also, and I think that's just because my brain always looks at way too many sides of an issue. But I also look at what is that going to accomplish when it's someone who is, you know, who is really just bent on abusing children or molesting children, just because, to put it crassly, just because your dick don't work, that is not the only way that you can harm a child.
That's the truth.
So that's one of the things that, because it depends on how their deviance, for lack of a better term, works. So that was one of the other things that I thought about. It's like, yeah, no, I'm not against it. And on its face, it's like, yeah, get them out of here. But how much does that fix?
Two weeks ago, the woman that the recidivism is so, it's very high with some of these individuals. This person was convicted on multiple rapes, abducting women off the street at gunpoint and raping them. Like the rape you know, think about in the movie style rape. Mm-hmm. And he fell asleep drunk. She woke up, cut his dick and balls off, microwaved it, and fed it to him at gunpoint. Like literally. And then in a police statement was like, I cut his junk up and fed it to him like a, you know, like a blah, 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 and I do it again. And I couldn't feel bad for her. And they didn't prosecute her or nothing, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm not an expert. I don't know. This isn't my duty. This is my job. I just know I'm of the opinion that, you know, I've as a Unitarian Universalist, ascribed to our first principle that there is inherent dignity and worth of all people, period. Mm-hmm. No other than that. That includes, unfortunately, that includes pedophiles and rapists. And there's humanity and dignity and worth. Doesn't mean that their current condition allows them, affords them the right to be in society and continue to do harm, you know?
Yeah.
You know, just because you have dignity and worth doesn't mean that we're going to let you go around fucking, like, hurting people and killing people and, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? But I don't know what the solution is. And in particular with pedophiles and, you know, I don't know. I
think my concern is, and I think it actually is a good protocol to have in place, especially as you're trying to transition people back into the real world. I think that there's a usefulness there in terms of, but I see it as a, in conjunction with, you know, therapy, yeah. in conjunction with treatment.
And where do you see the patient consent though?
I don't think that you can have in the immediate time, I don't think you can have patient consent because I don't think they've earned, I don't think they've earned that. You know, they are under the purview of the state in that moment. This is just what's set up now. I don't know how it works, but I'm just talking about how this would play out. I think that there's a role that chemical castration could play, but I also don't think, you know, it's like treating a symptom instead of treating the root cause.
I hear you, but they have like there's controversial, like realistic, like child sex dolls. There's things, there's therapeutic ways. And again, I'm not an expert. I don't know. I really don't. I'm not trying to like say that this should or shouldn't. There's something about an individual and the crime that they've committed now being castrated by the state, just something.
Well, it's chemical, so it's not permanent. So that's the first thing I would mention.
Oh, really? It comes back. I thought it was forever.
It just stops it for now. So it's not something that's
I thought once you did these chemicals, it was done. Like your balls fell off or something. No.
That would be actual castration.
But that's what the word castration means.
No, that's why the chemical part's in the beginning.
So they have to give you some shot and you keep getting
You take medication.
And if you don't, they go pick you up.
Correct.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like a hormonal.
Okay, yeah. I feel a little bit different then. I feel a little bit different.
Think all about right. it like birth control.
Yeah.
All right. Birth
control, but I mean, you know.
No, I got now, this is like a step up from an ankle monitor. I'm mm-hmm. totally here for that then. I thought it was permanent.
No, it's not permanent. And I don't know if they have like steps in place, like how long they have to take it and what happens. But in my mind, I think it could be part of a successful, you know, path to stopping behavior. So I think that's something.
That I had a mistake. I thought that I took the word castration to mean that this chemical did it and then your balls never worked again.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. You so worried I just, about
I,
your balls.
I think my concern.
Hey, like, I got a pair of them.
I'm not against it. Like I said, by any means. I just, I hope that people don't. Part of it is I hope that people don't think, oh yeah, well he's chemically castrated and don't necessarily have those
urges,
those safeguards in place when it comes doesn't mean to this their actual safe. Children.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, it's not you're a panacea.
Still, you still like this isn't a cure, so right, you still right. have to be vigilant about your babies around raping ass Uncle Charlie or you know whatever the Charlie equivalent is in Indonesia.
Exactly. Some other news came out this week, which is the Justice Department. This is a fucking shocker to no one. Says the poor can't be held when they can't afford bail. This was from NBC News. They say holding defendants in jail because they can't afford to make bail is unconstitutional, the Justice Department said. In a court filing late Thursday, the first time the government has taken a position before a federal appeals, such a position before a federal appeals court, it's the latest step by the Obama administration in encouraging state courts to move away from imposing fixed cash bail amounts and jailing those who can't pay.
Mm-hmm.
And they use that. They put you in jail for a bunch of days and you lose
days,
weeks, whatever it is, however months. Long you lose jobs, months. Work, connection, family. And then they come back and they say, well, you've been here 2 months and why don't we just plead guilty, take the fucking charge and get out now. It's gross.
Yeah.
It is gross. Some of the first policy work I ever did was on bail reform in New Jersey. And let me just tell you, like, really, it's obscene. Philadelphia alone, the city of Philadelphia alone, 25% of its prison population that's in the city of Philadelphia are not. They have not been convicted of anything. They have not been put in court. No one's found them guilty of anything. They are sitting there because they can and sometimes can't come up with $500 to get out.
Listen, Leslie and... I shit you not, a fucking litany of like ministers, archbishops, fucking like every goddamn like mayors and people all over NAACP.
Yeah,
they had a line of people talking for this reform. You know who's on the other side? All the people on the other side? There's about 10 of them. Guess who they were?
Bail bondsmen.
Bail bondsman industry. And literally, was the only
so
one
we had all
it.
These testimonies. I was there, but representing the Drug Policy Alliance. So we had all these like. Experts and testimonies and all of this stuff, you know, from a psychiatrist to all sorts of people talking about it. So it's there. We present all this amazing information about, you know, why this doesn't work on all different levels, not just for the people that are incarcerated. It doesn't work for society. It doesn't work for the jailing system. It doesn't work economically for the state. Like all of these reasons why it's just really, really dumb when you should be releasing somebody on a nonviolent offense on their own recognizance and sending them home so they can continue to contribute to their families, to their communities, and then, you know, still come to court, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's a racket.
Yeah, I mean, and the bail bondsman got up there, and literally their entire pitch, Mal, was we're gonna pay less taxes to the state because this will cut down on our profits.
Yeah, I mean it's
they well, had no nothing else.
That was
that's it.
It.
Well, that's
money.
All it's about.
Money.
That's really all it's about. And you know there was the guy who he was in jail for 6 days for being drunk because he didn't have $160. Mm-hmm.
Happens all the
six
time.
6 days for being drunk. 6 days for doing some shit you do every fucking Friday.
It's nuts.
It's absolutely ridiculous. And mm-hmm. and so when people were talking about, you know, when the people in support of it were, you know, whining about it, all I could see is this man had some fucking Manischewitz and crossed the street and he's in jail for a week. And this is ridiculous. It's absolutely insane. That's why I feel like they're, when they start talking about, when they get all high and mighty talking about tax dollars and all of that, your tax dollars pay for prison and you just paid for somebody to sit in jail for 6 days because he had one too many. And that's not stupid to you. It's no, it's they will find any reason to persecute poor people and minorities. That's really the bottom line.
Absolutely. They definitely do. I think, what's the name of that documentary? Broken on All Sides. If you people haven't seen it, it's a great doc about the issues of prison, bail reform, all sorts of things, overcrowding in the Philadelphia area. But one of the main people that they interview in that, his name is Nathaniel, is one of the formerly incarcerated citizens that were talked about in the movie. You know, he was in a cell, 3-2 a cell. There was a temporary, like they called it a boat on the floor. So it was like a blue, like plastic shell.
It was like a, so they're meant to have two people in a room.
Well, actually, it was originally meant to have one.
Right.
Then they added a bunk,
second
bed,
bunk bed.
And then they have a third
one that's a blue, it literally looks like the shit, like, you'd sleep on in a boat.
Yeah.
Like it's basically a plastic, like
an
hammock
insert.
Tub mm-hmm. that hangs off of one wall and you put a mattress and a blanket in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's called
a
blue tub.
I don't even think they put it in a mattress and they just put like heavy blankets and then you have to like, you don't want to be that person because the rats can get into it because it's not off the ground. So all of these things, like, and you think about somebody who, again, hasn't been convicted. We hear people talk all the time about innocent until proven guilty. And these are conditions we have people that are quote unquote innocent until proven guilty living in, sometimes for up to 3.5 months. That was the average in New Jersey when we were pushing for bail reform. 3.5 months, the average person who couldn't come up
for
with between
$500
to $5,000 to get out of jail for non-violent offenses. Meanwhile, if you're a wealthy drug dealer who is dealing, you know, large quantities in the state and you have enough money to pay your bail, you're back at home the next day. It's fucking ridiculous. It's gross. It's not just about them. It's about them being okay making money off the backs of black people and then taking white money to take them out of the equation altogether. And it's just gross. You know, I think it's been interesting seeing all of these federal level decisions, especially in the last year and a half or so, or year or so, that the Obama administration has been putting forth. I haven't seen it trickle down to the states yet, but you know, I think if HRC is successful in the fall, hopefully we can continue this trend and continue the pressure from the federal level down to the states and see more of this happen at the state level, because that's where most of us encounter, unfortunately, encounter law enforcement. So, Drew, I think you're next.
You know, I didn't really read up on this article.
Oh, we can skip it then.
It was about the Washington Post and this big quest to find these African slave ships, which no one even bothered looking for. He's getting some funding from the Smithsonian, and hopefully they'll have a few more artifacts, and they've been doing some great research. But just a long, arduous, you know, just as you know, information and documentation.
Are you ready to take?
Kind of. There's a dearth of that kind of content, but
yeah, there is definitely a dearth.
It doesn't
of that
seem
kind
like he's
content.
Found a lot of.
Well, he has not. There was another big find that's on going to go on display in the Smithsonian later this year, maybe beginning of January,
at the New African American Museum.
Yeah.
Correct.
Oh,
okay. Correct. So they're you know, out looking for stuff, and they've got some funding now to be able to do the first phase. But it's just, you know, not interesting, but a shame that, you know, this part of our history, because we want to forget it, is literally becoming lost.
And one of the things about it is that it's not only because it's very easy to say, you know, white people forget, you know, white people don't talk about it. But one of the things that he was talking about was how the shame, there's so much shame from black people about people who were descendants of slaves. Mm-hmm. How one guy almost didn't get elected because he was, you know, that was one of the accusations that they threw at him, that he was a descendant of slaves. So it's very interesting and something that I'd never heard of prior to reading that article, or never really thought about. I won't say I'd never heard of it, but it wasn't something that I gave a great deal of thought about. But it was really interesting to find out how on all sides there are people who just kind of want to push away from that really, really ugly part of history.
Yeah, I think it's hard to like confront the realities of it. I mean, it's why we see, you know, slavery whitewashed so often, you know, portrayed with a smile. And, you know, we talk all the time on this show about that interview that tour guide at a plantation, former slave plantation, did, and said that, you know, the questions that white people ask him, like, oh, but they were nice to their slaves, right? Or, but they ate well, right? They took care of them, right?
A blog or a Twitter feed.
They were property, ma'am. Like, this is not, degrees of property.
It was better than being homeless, right?
And when they, you know, put it, say, in the movies or whatever, there's always like this triumphant story where there's this one slave who got over on it. No, it was fucking slavery. Yeah. People were getting killed and taken from their kids, and there was no fucking happy ending. Yeah. They were slaves. Yeah. They were at times considered less than the animals. Yeah. No.
Like, I don't think that the cows in Wyoming get to decide anything about their lives, even though they may be well fed. But still, let's keep it serious. So unfortunately, news did come out as well from the federal government that the Department of Justice has declined to press any charges against a police officer in the shooting death of Jeremy Reed in Bridgeton, New Jersey, which I don't know. You know, this was very close to where we lived when we lived in New Jersey. And he was shot in December of 2014. Routine traffic stop, quote unquote. It's all caught on camera. And, you know, I obviously, trigger warning for anybody who does or doesn't want to see the video. It's pretty disturbing, because the thing that disturbed me the most about it is that the police officer says to Jeremy, you know, don't move. I'm going to fucking kill you. And then he kills him, like, and literally.
And worse still, he knew him. They knew each other. He'd harassed and pulled him over like two other times. Yeah. It's, you know, like, newsflash, white folk. Black people, Jeremy was killed on camera with his hands up, and there were no charges.
None.
None.
Mm-hmm. He was among the person who killed him. Officer Days was among the arresting officers in August of 2014, with Reed was charged with several crimes, including drug possession and obstruction of justice. So he knew him quite well, and there shouldn't have been any confusion, and they should have been able to talk to each other. So
no, and it didn't.
He had his hands up.
It wasn't
so
quite well. The driver, because I think Jeremy wasn't the driver. Wasn't
no, he was
passenger.
The passenger.
Yeah.
That's the other.
So the
thing.
Driver, the driver's like, they fucking knew each other. He came out saying, "I'm gonna fucking get you. I'm sick of you." Like, they knew each other. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, he pulled him over this some other time. It was like, I'm gonna go fuck with. There's Jeremy Reed. I'm gonna go fuck with him again.
More disturbingly is that the city of Bridgeton has an offer out to pay $2 million to the family of Jeremy Reed for a wrongful death. So I just want to understand. I'm really trying. It's been really hard for me to understand how these states and cities keep continuing to pay out for wrongful death, but nobody's responsible for the death.
Well, I mean,
like, I know the civil case, barrier to prove is lower, but still fundamentally they're admitting that somebody was at fault.
Well, I feel like we were just talking a minute ago about how Black lives are property. And I don't think that's something that's ever been completely removed from our psyches. And so they don't have to really acknowledge that they did anything illegal or morally wrong. They're basically, I just always have seen this as paying you for your loss of property. And that's been, I mean, when you look back at even cases where, the cops were quote unquote, found guilty, look at how many of those were overturned.
Right.
And, the family got their money, but the message in those types of cases has really pretty much just been waited out.
You hit
not
it so on the
that
head.
You're wrong.
You hit it so on the head because they honestly, the monetary damages are a function of your earning potential. Mm-hmm. Watch these cops kill somebody that makes millions of dollars a year. It'll be a huge payout because, well, he was making $1 million a year. He had 19 more years to live. You know what I mean? It'll be a much different scenario.
Mm. Yeah.
You're
yeah.
so right. I keep saying that the system can't, on a like judicial basis, find complicity and fault and guilt, because then the entire system's guilty, right? Like, to say that, like, oh, wait, we should not have killed Jamie Reed's, like, oh, we shouldn't have killed any of them then. Like, ooh, what the fuck are we doing? Like, it's almost impossible for the judicial system to be like, yep, this is wrong, this is guilty, you have to go to jail. Like, I don't think that's, I don't say ever going to happen, but
I don't see it happening. And the other thing that we have to look at that sticks out to me is you're like, the system is racist, right?
Yep.
So we rely on racist prosecutors, racist judges, racist cops, racist grand juries. Where are you supposed to get this justice from? Like, where are you going to actually get racial justice when every facet, in the core of it, at the core of it, are racist people running it? Mm. So, it's something that I won't say that I've given up hope on, but it's not. I'm somewhat desensitized to it.
Mm.
It means less than nothing when a grand jury decides not to indict, because why would they indict? It's just a Black person.
Mm. Yeah, that's the truth. Whew. Let's move on from all this bullshit.
I got some Olympic news. Or
yeah, we'll do some Olympic news. Not that all of it's great, but let's do some Olympic news.
Oh, God damn it.
What's going on with you, Drew? Get your shit together.
My jingle ballot failed again. That's so bad. An Ethiopian runner won silver medal and led a protest that could land him in jail. In fact, I think is seeking exile, perhaps even. But Nairobi, when he crossed the Olympics marathon finish line, Faiza Laliza put his hands above his head in an X. Most of those who watched Laliza's spectacular silver medal performance didn't know what that meant or just how dangerous a protest they were watching. Laliza was protesting Ethiopian government's killing of hundreds of the country's Oromo people, the country's largest ethnic group, which has long complained about being marginalized by the country's government. The group has held protests this year over plans to relocate Oromo land. Many of those protests ended in bloodshed. According to Human Rights Watch, more than 400 people have been killed since November. So for months, Oromos have been using the same ex-gesture that Lalisha, 26, used at the finish line, and then used it again in a news conference, and more specifically talked about, the Ethiopian government is killing my people, so I stand with all my protests anywhere, as Oromo is my tribe. My relatives are in prison, and if they talk about democratic rights, they are killed.
Wow.
So that was very dangerous.
Mm.
You know, that wasn't just like, you know, that was dangerous too, I guess, for Moses and the other guy to put the black power fist up in the 60s. But, you know, I hope that it has some impact for Faiza and that he's safe.
I think it's so amazing when we see, I mean, one of the beautiful things about the Olympics, and it's funny, you know, we saw a lot of people posting like me, you know, the rest of the, you know, four years and 11 months and 2 weeks, fuck America. And then those 2 weeks, USA, USA, just like there is a fever in it that gets, you know, put together. And sometimes what I'm always amazed of is to see, you know, these athletes from countries that don't get a lot of shine all the time, having the moment in the sun, having a spotlight, and to see someone use it in such a powerful way at, you know, great risk to themselves and to others. It's really inspiring. Really inspiring.
Completely agree.
Good for him. One thing that I was super excited about is that Black Girl Magic took the spotlight at the Olympics this year.
Oh,
yes,
it did. Again, this is from NBC News, but they definitely talked about whether it was Simone Biles or Chrissy Castlin, Simone Manuel. I mean, it was really just like a wealth of amazing black women.
The entire U.S. female sprinting team.
Just doing amazing, amazing work. And it's really fantastic to see.
Sorry,
oh, that's okay. Kate Wise Whitehead, a professor at Loyola University who studies race and gender, said it's very interesting to see black women going into areas where you really don't see black women competing with all different body shapes, complexions, and hairstyles being represented. Black women see and feel that there is no door closed to us and that we're not just walking through those doors, but we're dominating. I thought it was really cool and it was so sweet. One of my favorite moments of the entire Olympics was when the three hurdlers were getting their medals, the 100-meter hurdles,
first sweep
of that ever by all three American women. A black official from the Olympics was putting her a medal around her neck, the gold medal winner, and said, "Hey, I'm so proud of you. Black girls rock." And she said, "You're right. Black girls do rock." And I was like, that was on the fucking Olympics in the middle of a medal ceremony. I mean, really, it's just amazing to see just how many of us are just doing amazing things. It was the best Olympics for me, just off that alone. And not just American women, just black women all up and through everybody's teams everywhere, winning all of the things.
It just gives you kind of like the warm fuzzies, you know, to see all of that. To see all that girl power, to see all that black girl power, all that black girl magic. It was wonderful. I was kind of checked out of the Olympics. And I still, like, it's hard not to get swept up in that.
There was a piece, I think, that said was it just women or black women? If it was just women.
If it was just American women, that we could have been, if we were our own country, the American female athletes on the Olympic team, we would have been third in medal count overall.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, the women, there were more women for the first time on the U.S. Olympic team than men. First time ever that's happened.
By a lot.
And it wasn't that much. It was like 51-49. It was almost half, but we tipped the scales in our favor. But more importantly, we took more medals than the men did. I mean, I think
men were fucking up.
And not just fucking up. I don't think their dominance was quite as clear. We can look at the basketball teams, the women and men's basketball teams, and see, you know, the men struggled in those first couple rounds. The women, they literally barely sweat. Like, they fucking just killed everybody every game constantly.
They haven't lost.
No, they've never
lost. Since 92?
They haven't lost since they added female basketball.
Well,
to the
I was like, I don't think they had it. Okay. So there you go.
The men don't got that same record. They blew one, didn't they?
Yeah, they blew one.
France or Serbia or something.
Somewhere weird.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about black girl magic, and I would say black magic, and more specifically, Jamaican magic.
Yes.
Like the island of barely 3 million people.
Hey, where's the horn at? This is when you play it. FYI. Light has an idea. More fire.
So I came across on Twitter, and it was a tweet of Vine. Somebody said, this is my mom, my Jamaican mother, watching the Olympics.
Okay, so before Usain you Bolt. Do that, you said to me, like, oh, my God, you got to watch this video of this Jamaican woman. I go, oh, does she have pots? And you go, what the fuck are you talking about? I go, was she banging pots and pans? And you were like, why would she be doing
that? No. You said, was she banging pots? I said, how the fuck did you know that?
Right. And I go,
how the fuck did you know that?
It's a Jamaican thing. Like, that's what you do.
And I said, somebody right away when I tweeted it was like, what's with the symbols? I'm like, man, that's her fucking pressure cooker. Her Dutch oven lids, man.
Yeah, the Dutch oven pot.
But so this is her watching the Olympics.
Come, give it everything. Why? Give it everything. Whoa,
she was standing like so 4 good. Inches from the TV, just like doing this like leg shimmy. Tear it up, come on. Oh, I love it.
Sounded just like my mom. It's funny too, because when we see them running and you're like, are you rooting for America? I'm like, is Jamaica running? You're like, yeah. I'm like, no, I'm not rooting for America, just FYI. So you know, I will not be rooting for America. My mother would kill me. But that was really good to see. And yes, I mean, the Jamaican runners dominated. They won, I think, 2 gold medals they've never won before. And they've just, you see them now running in more distances. They're doing hurdling now. So you've seen the Jamaican national team just continue to flourish.
Wait till they start fucking jumping. Listen, and fucking
watch.
Triple jumping and high jumping and pole vault. Put a pole vault in a Jamaican's hands, it's over, dude.
Well, Usain, you know, he does so much work with youth in Jamaica. And so much work generally in Jamaica. I mean, he's really just an amazing countryman. And really, you know, you can't, if you want to do a commercial with him, you have to come to Jamaica to film it. Like, he's very, very focused on getting opportunities for his people. And it's really nice to see it paying off with so much young, great, wonderful talent coming
to the
Olympics.
He's the world's most recognizable athlete, arguably. Mm-hmm. And you pointed out that after every run, he had a Brazilian flag.
Yeah, in the Jamaican colors.
It's very clear that he was shooting something for the Olympic Committee, clearly, for IOC, for the city of Brazil. But he's like, you know, I just won the Super Bowl and I'm going to go to Disneyland, like, commercial paid moment. Like, he was doing that.
Yeah.
I'm like, good for you, man.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you.
All right, we're moving on to this week in hashtags.
We just still don't have the thing yet.
No, but we'll do it. Ba-na-na, ba-na-na. So this week in hashtags, actually, we have some other ones to talk about, but I wanted to start with the hashtag love for Leslie J, which we mentioned a couple weeks ago, but it is back on the Twitters today, actually, because unfortunately, hackers decided to hack Leslie Jones' website and publish nude photos of her along with her passport, a picture of her actual driver's license, and then some other photos as well. Obviously, the site's been taken down since then, but it's been disturbing to see, you know, this racist attack against her. They had, like, pictures of gorillas again. It's just,
it's so
horrible.
It's so evil. And it's because she's black.
Yep.
There is no other reason. There were 4 Ghostbusters, and for some reason, she is the only one who is getting attacked like this. It's because she's black. It's because she's a dark-skinned black woman. It's because she's not some little tiny cute thing where they can package and feel safe with her blackness. She is a see her on the train, black woman, and those are the kind that they would rather pretend to be invisible, and she's not going to be invisible. That's why people are being so hateful toward her, because she refuses to be invisible.
Yeah, it's so, so true.
Yeah, unapologetically black, and I would say, like, you know, just call it, like, non-respectability conforming black is just
that. You know what I think? She doesn't look biracial. She does, you know, all of the things that that make a woman untouchable. You know, she doesn't possess any of those traits. And you see the way that people think it's okay to attack her. More disturbingly, though, which is what I really wanted to talk about, especially with Mel, was I saw Kamau Bell tweeted earlier today. Something to the effect of, and he's actually deleted already because people were already, like, on his shit, but it was like, you know, throw what you want. Les Dog will rise no matter what you throw at her.
No.
I am, you know, this strong black woman bullshit is so insidious, the way
it is killing us.
It's literally killing us. Literally killing us. Putting us in the hospital, giving us nervous breakdowns. And as we continue to perpetuate this notion that we can't feel, because that's where it comes from. It comes from this general notion that we feel less pain than other people and can't feel pain. Mm-hmm. So I'm so fucking sick of it. And, you know, I find it, especially when it comes from men, to just be infuriating. I'll give you the floor, Mel.
It upsets me only because, and I'm a black girl who has brothers and cousins and a father and uncles who, you know, when somebody fucked with me, you were going to get fucked up. Like, that was just,
right.
So when I was exposed to a world where that wasn't the case. And even as I got older, when I realized that my brothers and my cousins and whoever couldn't protect me from everything, it was really strange to see not only that I couldn't be protected from everything, but by how hands off people would become, and especially men would become, because I'm strong, because I'm tough. I have a quick and a slick mouth, and there's not a whole lot of things that you can say to me that I can't give it right back to you, but I don't want to all the time, you know? And the fact that, you know, that's the thing that people will point at and admire, no one will think, you know what, she's had a hard fucking day and maybe she does not want to be called a fat, ugly bitch, or, you know, have to take that and turn it into something that stops her from crying, you know, and turn it around and make somebody laugh. Like, maybe I don't want to have to deal with that. And people don't see that. They just get to see how strong, how resilient. And that's what they hold on to. And it's fucking whack.
It's so whack.
It's so fucking whack. And black women are still people. And in the time that you spend to say, oh, she's going to be all right, you can take that and say, what the fuck is wrong with you? Sometimes men, black men, that's what we need to hear. We need to actually hear you say with your mouth, with your fingertips, hey, why the fuck are you talking to her like that? What is your problem?
And even if you don't want to get confronting, then focus on the person that's been hurt. Not with you'll be all right, but are you all right?
Are you okay?
Ask a goddamn question for once instead of, I mean, I doubt Kamau Bell didn't talk to Leslie today. He doesn't know that she can take whatever gets dished out. He just decided that that's what he was going to, that was the message he wanted to send out. And it's fucking disgusting and it's wrong and it's bullshit. I was talking to a black social worker here in Grand Rapids a couple weeks ago at a healing event. We were talking one-on-one on the side. We're trying to put together emotional emancipation circle here for some black folks here in the fall. So we're talking about a few things. And she said, you know, Leslie, it's been like the most stressful, you know, couple of months with so much stuff going on. She goes, but I'm so nourished by my job because most of the time I'm the first black person that my black patients have ever seen in the healthcare profession. And she said that I find that, you know, what I've known from my years of doing this work is that black women in particular, we present extremely differently when it comes to trauma, when it comes to depression, when it comes to anxiety, when it comes to stress, because we on the facade are consistently pushed and forced into showing this strong black woman, you know, exterior. But behind that is a lot of other stuff going on. And the average clinical medical health clinician, they have their textbook and it tells them that when someone has anxiety, these are the things you're going to see. But when those things are behind the strong black woman facade that we're forced to walk around with, they don't look like that. So they don't get diagnosed. They don't get proper treatment. And then their first actual crisis moment, who do they interact with? The goddamn police. This is a epidemic level situation with regard to black women not being encouraged to show their feelings, to acknowledge their feelings, to be okay and secure in the fact that we don't have to carry everything. It's okay to be upset. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be sad. We are full human beings with a wide spectrum of emotion, and strength is just one of those things. Yeah. It's not the only thing.
I think how we're admired, that's contingent on how much we suffer bullshit. Like, think about how many times when people talk about what they admire about black women, their strength,
their resilience, their ability to no matter what, I don't want to have to do that shit, motherfucker. I'm not Batman. I would like to get up in the morning, drink my fucking tea, go to work without white people's bullshit, come the fuck home, and watch my stories. That's literally all I want to do. And if I did that for 365 days in a year, I'd die a happy woman. I don't get to do that. I don't even think I get to do that 12 days a year. Mm. So don't put that on me. But since that's expected of us, and it's almost required for us to function because when we do not fit into that, we're penalized. I mean, think about the type of bullshit you have to deal with when you work out in the corporate world as a black woman. If you react to the bullshit that you have to deal with on a daily basis, you would live in HR. Mm-hmm. You would live in HR. I work at a very conservative firm and I have to deal with passive aggressive white ass bullshit every day. And one of my superiors admires me because he sees what's going on and I still behave professionally. I still do a good job. I still hold my head high. But at no point in time does it occur to him to look at these motherfuckers and say, hey, she's a good person. Won't you fucking knock it off? It's like, what does your admiration do if I have high blood pressure and I need to take a Xanax just to function? Mm.
Say that again.
Mm. You know, that's almost like a form of like performative allyship, mm-hmm. right? It's like, oh, look, I'm on your side, but I ain't going to do shit about it.
Right.
Oh, I see you struggling. Good job.
Right. I don't want to hear how great you think I am. I want you to get these motherfuckers off me.
Yeah. I
have to say, you and our household, Leslie, we've turned a corner with regards to like a little bit of that discussion when like you'll have a Twitter essay or we do something. At the end of it, every time I'm like, pay black women. Mm-hmm. Here's a link. You know, yeah. And like
that's what I said, compliments are not compensation. So
right.
that's
get cash.
Yeah, I mean, not just cash, but just like real support. And support is not saying, oh, you handled that well. How about you make sure it never fucking happens again?
Yeah,
that's what we want. That's what we need. That's what we deserve. Because you know what? If Becky had this happen to them, you better be damn sure we'd be having a fucking meeting about it next week.
Oh, absolutely.
We'd be talking about new policies, new procedures, new ways to ensure this never fucking happens again. So, yeah. That's what
But it's going to take one black woman to take it back and get really, really fucking real, probably by illegal means, for people to think, hey, maybe black women are stressed out in the workplace. Yeah. It's going to take one. I think the Clinton years kind of softened a lot of our edges. And so there are things that we just kind of conform to. We're going to have to, like, one of us is really going to have to take it back old school for people to realize that we're not fucking playing and to leave us the hell alone.
These young people, dude, they don't fucking play. Like, honestly, I know a few of these young people and they're, you know, they're in college, they're going to get degrees, they're going to get jobs and all of this shit, but they don't have any fucks. They didn't come out with fucks. They didn't have any fucks stored up. Their mama didn't give them no fucks. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting seeing them confronted this world, in the next 5 or 6 years.
You say it's going to take one. I think it's going to be like, we're going to talk about it in a minute, the black women equal pay day.
Yeah.
There's going to be like a whole slew, right? Just like black women everywhere are going to stop giving fucks and like the news will be full of it and shit. Like,
yeah.
In a law office downtown, shot 3 people.
Yeah.
in a dentist's office, blah, blah, blah. The thing is,
I feel like that's what it's going to, that's where women are literally being.
I always thought Kim liked me until she came in with an AK-47.
It's almost a game. Let's see how much she can take. Mm-hmm. And it's so obvious. You know, it's scary how empowered people feel to mishandle black women in the workplace. Via microaggressions, via aggression.
Extra aggression.
I'm telling you. Please don't kill me, Mel. You're one of my black friends.
Like, I mean, I cannot think of one job where I've had where somebody, there wasn't a white person trying to tell me about the black person I reminded them of. Their favorite black person at the old job. It's like, no, I'm not your favorite black friend. I'm not Sandra. I will slap the shit out of you.
Listen, Mel, there's... there's exactly two black women on the organizing committee for this thing with our church that we did at our General Assembly. 1,500 people there. Maybe 200 black people.
Not quite. Yeah,
maybe 200 black people. But again, two black women, Leslie and another woman, that when I say look nothing alike, Leslie's 5'4". This other woman's like 5'8" or 5'9". You know, like maybe 5'10".
We don't look anything alike. Hair color is different. Like so literally, we do not look alike.
Couldn't be more dissimilar.
So before we go, I said to her, I said, so how many times are you going to be calling me and am I going to be called you? We had like a bet. It was like 5. I'm not kidding. It was 15 fucking times in like 6 days. We literally addressed the entire assembly, introduced ourselves by name to the entire assembly.
Stood up.
Twice.
I'll say this. You both start with L, maybe.
Whatever, dude.
I'm not trying to equivocate my
life.
Not
because
people.
They do the same shit to Kenny and Carlton, too. One of them will be the other. But it's just this general amalgam of blackness. Well,
the best was that I didn't know you had had this conversation and what was going on. Yeah. And somebody comes up to Leslie and gives like... I couldn't even call it a non sequitur because it was totally like obtuse and random because he thought she was somebody else.
Yeah, he thought he was continuing a conversation with her. And we walked away and you go, what the fuck was that? I go, oh, he thought I was Lena.
I couldn't believe it.
No
doubt.
Like,
what the fuck was that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I don't like to travel anymore either. The microaggressions when I travel, I can't take it anymore, Mel. Honestly.
The hair thing, that really used to get to me. The searching, because there's no reason.
What?
There's no reason to search hair.
Has there ever been in that?
No reason to search hair.
No, it's just another way of saying that they have dominion over
our bodies. I know, but like, not even dominion. Mm-hmm. Was there ever any like TSA memo that's like, you know, look out for black women's hair? They're smuggling tons of stuff. I don't know why. It just...
Well, I mean, to me, there has to be some sort of, like, decision that was made that this was something that needed to be done to search our hair. Because, you know, the same friend, Lena, was telling me, she said that she was at the airport and she was with another black woman. They were going through and she has fairly straight hair, Lena does. And as they were going through, the man searched the first black woman's hair and he went to search hers. And the TSA woman looks over and goes, oh no, she has that good hair. You can let her through.
Mm.
So to me, that's institutional.
One of my favorite people, Rod from The Black Guy Who Tips, he has a segment on his show called Fuck It With Black People. And I believe that they have fucking with black people meetings.
They must.
And I think that, you know, searching afros was in the fucking with black people meeting.
It's pissing us off, that's for sure, so.
Yeah. Definitely. They from what I understand, there was supposed to be some sort of, I think I read, maybe within the last month, that they were amending that and discontinuing that practice.
They've been said that though. They won't stop.
But yeah, there's always going to be somebody. No, it wasn't. It was the policy. Mm-hmm.
Sadder still, when I travel with Drew, they never touch my hair.
No, they never do.
Never.
I envelop you with my white privilege.
I was about to say you have that shroud of
whiteness. They don't want to inconvenience him so much that they're willing to let me just go through.
I'm not like, you know, like my handle's very white guy. For a reason, man. Like, I'm like really, really white. Like,
real Caucasian.
Oh man, I'm 6'3".
You're almost translucent.
Like, no, seriously, I'm literally tall, right? I'm over 6 feet. I'm over 200 pounds. I come from, you know, like wealth and means, so I kind of can carry myself clothing wise and so forth and so on. And I can go to that like in an instant. Like, I can give you that like. I don't know what it is, but just like my white look.
Whiteness.
And they just don't want to. They don't want to.
The witness of whiteness.
Yeah, Leslie's right. They don't want to inconvenience of.
Yeah, that overrides almost everything.
An important looking white man.
I say all the time that the general concern people have for your well-being in public, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's sometimes it baffles me. Like their true concern for how comfortable you are. It's amazing.
The thing that is, I don't want to say like troubling or whatever, but I've had to honestly like untrain myself from using angry white guy. Because it's so fucking effective.
Oh, it's so effective.
You walk in somewhere and you don't have to get like really angry. You're like, oh, I can't believe you did this. I waited. Oh, I'm sorry. Here's a bunch of fucking coupons. Here's some shit for free. Here you go.
Let me do that shit.
But you know what? Well, I do channel angry white man. That is like when I want something, like if I decide that I'm not taking no for an answer, I tap into my inner angry white man, because I mean I've worked with attorneys for almost 20 years.
You know,
so I know the words to get it right. And I have a I'd say a,
a 93% effectiveness rate. It's just that for me, I have to have a pit bull hold on that shit and commit. So I understand why it's intoxicating, because when I'm in the mood where I feel like I don't want to have to deal with the bullshit, I definitely think, what would a white man do? And that's how I act.
It's amazing. And what you said, I was thinking, you said 93%. I was like, wow, that's amazing. That's really great. And then you said you have to be a pit bull. Like, so you take it, I assume, I don't know what the...
I have to take it to a further extent.
Yeah, I think people's reaction now with you is like, oh boy. Like, yeah, she's serious. This is for real, for real, for real, for real.
Because the thing is, at first, like, it's, you know, when I start out, I'm just some black woman. They don't give a fuck about what I want. But when I'm so insistent about this is how it's gonna be, they try to, you can see them like searching, well, maybe she's actually somebody. Maybe she's somebody that
that's
we don't
a skill. Be. That's a skill. Yeah, I feel embarrassed. I really do.
I have definitely. I'm like, okay, you really need to stop this. It's not that serious. But I'm like, no. They would do it for somebody else, and they're going to do it for me.
When I say I'm embarrassed, for two things. One, the speed and rapidity with which that like weaponry comes out. Like that's mm-hmm. like the number one go to in the tool belt. It's like, mm-hmm. and then two, it's like, I'll do it and I'll get something. Unless he's like, Drew, it was like a $2.99 dessert at KFC.
I'll always be like, really? It's a like parfait. That's okay, cool. Whatever.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. I dig my heels in the sand. I become that white man and I'm getting what I want. It takes a whole lot more effort for me, but I understand the effort that it takes is completely worth it when you feel like you're right.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I my job,
or just being a dick and you don't want to give up.
right.
My job is sales, and not that it's similar, but there are different, like, you know, I don't know,
closes,
like, yeah, just like you're manipulating to a degree. There's like a dance and you're kind of like doing this and it's like this and that and I definitely have had like clients like, oh man, you're good. You know, like, I didn't even know you're going with that, but here you go, here's $100,000. I'm like, thanks.
For sure. For
and that
sure.
that is intoxicating. For sure, for sure. Yeah. When you know what you're doing and you're like, I'm going to go in here, I'm going to do this, I'm going to fucking crush it, I'm going to come out with a big honking deal, you're like, yeah.
Well, that's one of the reasons when I talk about privilege, when I deal with privilege, when I fight it, I also have to remember to check myself. Like, if I ever get to where I want to be, am I going to be that person? Because I know how wonderful it feels or how wonderful it has to feel to kind of have the world at your feet and get what you want. So mm-hmm. it's like, you know, I don't want to replace the privilege. I want to eradicate it. But I understand how once you get certain access, I can see how people can kind of be, I don't know, corrupted by the dark side. Mm-hmm. White men are Palpatine.
Listen, I mean, not just corrupted by the dark side, it becomes... I think there are two steps, or multiple, but for me, there's been at least two. And the first one was this kind of understanding, like, and it's hard to admit, but like a lot of like who and what I think of myself and how I've defined who I am as my relationship to society at large has been framed by white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like, you know, like, oh, all right, I'm not special. I'm kind of mediocre and I've had a leg.
I say that all the time. Like, so the day all the white people realize how unimpressive they truly are, that's the day.
Yeah. So that's, waiting for that, it. That's one. And I don't know what the other one would be, but like in terms of like privilege and like you want it and you don't want to give it up, it definitely makes life easier. You know?
Who I'm really put a good framed whiteness in an interesting way, and I'm in white privilege rather, because that's the biggest thing, because you've got there's a certain level of privilege that you have as a white person. There's definitely a certain level of privilege that you have as a white male, regardless. And Chris Rock did in one of his specials, I want to say it was the last, I think it was Shoot the Messenger, but I can't remember, but he talked about how in his neighborhood. It was like him, Mary J. Blige, some other super rich athlete or whatever. And he was like, and do you know who our neighbor is? A dentist. He's not the greatest dentist to ever, you know, touch a tooth. He's just a fucking dentist. And that is what it's like to kind of be black, make it, and see what's around you.
Yeah. It's
you have to, you have to excel. Mm. And that's a very, it's fascinating to watch. I see, like, from the outside looking in, you can see why white men are quaking in their fucking boots right now. Mm. Because I don't want to lose that shit either.
Right.
Well, and that's the, like, there's this thing about, like, losing it versus, like, I don't know, like, I don't think of it as losing it, but then, like, at the same token, like, I'm aware of what my privilege is, and I try to leverage it like a weapon. Like, I think of my privilege as, like, a superpower. How can I use my privilege to get into places that other people can't and make change and have impact and so forth and so on, right? Like, how can I disseminate knowledge and information on Twitter or Facebook? Like, there, you know, people are going to hear my voice because I'm a white man. Oh, very white guy said this. Oh, my God. And it could be, like, verbatim what Leslie Mack said 2 days ago. Yeah. Right? And, like, her tweet's, like, 10 people. Mine's, like, 500. Like, oh, my God, you're a fucking amazing white snowflake. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's ridiculous. And
think about how and that, like, if we've seen nothing in the last 2 years, especially, I mean, and I'm saying that with this, for lack of a better term, social justice movement on social media, things that black people have been saying for decades, for a fucking century.
Forever.
One white person says it, and it's revolutionized the way we look at race. Why? Why haven't you listened to black people when black people have been telling you that the police have been fucking us up for years?
Right.
Why have you not been listening to black people when we tell you that the justice system is fucking racist and that banks are racist and that we're making less for people with less than people with less experience than us? Why have you not listened to us when we said it and then finally one white person says it and it's like you've heard it for the first time?
Well, they've spent all of this time believing these lies, because really, if they didn't, how could they truly, like, live and go to sleep knowing the true situation of things, knowing how it's impossible for black families and black people to accumulate generational wealth due to institutional and economic sanctions against us? I mean, this is shit that they can't even, like, really come to terms with.
Literally, the cognitive dissonance needed to operate as a liberal white person is staggering. And if a white person starts investigating and they want to see supremacy for what it really is, and they're, like, putting pieces together and they're building it and the picture's getting clearer and clearer and clearer, once they see it for the, like, full weight and magnitude, they go fucking white guilt. I had it. Like, it's almost, I feel like a white person who's in this work who hasn't gotten to the point that they see the sum totality and had a sort of, like, oh my God, white, we're horrible white people, we're the worst. Like, if you didn't have that, like, period of time, like, I almost don't trust you. Like, I'm waiting for you to go fragile.
Yeah, it's funny because we look back at, like, even, you know, Thomas Jefferson's great example of somebody who, you know, justified slavery through, he felt, altruistic means. You know, we were childlike in our mental capacity and needed to be cared for in a paternalistic way. But that's not what he was really there and talking about. What he was talking about was justification for horrendous treatment of human beings.
Yeah.
He was justifying it. And so we continue to see that play out. Speaking of justifying horrendous treatment, French police make a woman remove clothing on Nice Beach following burkini ban.
Oh, my goodness.
Authorities in 15 towns have banned burkinis, citing public concern following recent terror attacks in the country. And I'm going to stop here for 1 second, because just that alone.
I hate that.
They are banning burkinis because of terrorist attacks. No terrorist has ever worn a burkini anywhere.
And no terrorist has attacked the fucking beach in a burkini.
So what the fuck does one thing have to do with another? But let's keep going on this bullshit-ass story.
Photographs, it is so amazing.
It's really unreal. Photographs have emerged of armed French police confronting a woman on a beach and making her remove some of her clothing as part of a controversial ban on the burkini. The images of police confronting the woman in Nice on Tuesday show at least four police officers standing over her. She was resting on the shore on the town's Promenade d'Anglais, the scene of last month's Bastille Day lorry attack, truck attack. After they arrive, she appears to remove a blue long-sleeve tunic, although one of the officers appears to take notes or issue an on-the-spot fine. The photographs emerge as a mother of two, also told on Tuesday how she had been fined on the beach in nearby Cannes, wearing leggings, a tunic, and a headscarf. Her ticket, seen by French news agency AFP, read that she was not wearing, quote, an outfit respecting good morals and secularism, end quote.
What?
She says,
so it's basically illegal to be Muslim in France.
Yep. She says, I was sitting on the beach with my family. I was wearing a classic headscarf. I had no intention of swimming. She wasn't even wearing a burkini, you guys.
It literally, I'm looking at it. It's like Lululemon pants,
yep.
A black fucking a tank top,
and a headscarf.
And then a tunic and a headscarf.
It's not a burkini.
It's not. Cool. She was just covering herself.
Yes. A witness to the scene, Matilda Cousin, confirmed the incident. Quote, the saddest thing was that people were shouting, go home. Some were applauding the police, she said. Her daughter was crying.
Once again, stories like this are so interesting because when so many Americans like to talk about Europe, they use this idyllic idea of what it's like to be a black person or a minority in Europe. And no, they will fuck your black ass up in Europe.
They throw bananas. They do monkey chants on the football field. They literally, skinheads get onto the football pitch in England and fucking do monkey chants and throw bananas at black players. That's better. That's better. Get the fuck out of here.
Talk to a few French Caribbean folks, and they'll tell you how fucked up the French are. For real, for real.
Well, do you remember a few years back when there was that uprising among the Black French youth? I want to say that was 2013 or 2014,
right?
Well, no, this goes back a little bit further. I think I was still maybe living in New Orleans. I can't remember if I was still in New Orleans or maybe I had just gotten to DC. I want to say this was maybe 10 years ago. And then there was another incident a couple of years ago, but there was something as far back as I want to say maybe 7 years ago. So it would have been since I left New Orleans.
Gotcha.
But this is something like they still have legitimate issues. If you are black, there is not somewhere, if you are a person of color, there is not anywhere that you can go where you are going to escape white supremacy.
Nope.
Europe is the fucking cradle. Where the fuck do you think these Americans came from?
Hello. Where do you think they got their fucking wealth from? Let's really call it. People, you know, they talk all the time, Finland and the Netherlands, they have such great societies. What the fuck do you think they have all the wealth that allows them to afford 6-hour work days and, you know, 3 months off? They built that shit off of the slave trade. That's how they got all of their wealth. You know, this long arm of people making money off of black bodies is all over Europe, and it's significant. And so nobody has been held to task for any of those things.
So. I like to remind people of that. We talked about the Olympics a couple of minutes ago, and then there was what was sixth place Sally complaining about, Caster Semenya and a few of the other, the women who actually won the Olympics.
But how you gonna come in sixth and complain about the winner though? You came in sixth, bitch.
Like, you're not even fourth.
You wouldn't even have won nothing.
Yeah, that's poor taste.
You would not have won anything. Let me tell you something. In damn near any fucking race, there's going to be at least one black person ahead of you. I don't give a fuck. It might just only be number one. There is going to be one black person. So you were probably not going to medal at all. And you kind of seem like you're just entitled. And I feel like people who are that entitled probably don't train so well.
Yeah, we call that hope soloing.
That
cowards. There are cowards out there.
Cowards.
It's a coward move. Really? Because looks like you lost.
Winning is cowardly. Okay.
And then they went on to win gold, didn't they? Didn't the team?
I'm just saying it was a shootout. How can they be cowards exactly? I just want to understand.
Maybe it was the Zika virus.
Well, Hope Solo is just an awful excuse for a human being, and people tolerated her when she won. But you can either be a winner, you can either be a loser or an asshole. You can't be an asshole loser. And that's what she is right now. So people aren't really dealing with her shit.
You know, we call that Lolo Jonesing.
Stop. Poor Lolo.
Poor Lolo is never going to get it together.
She really won't. I'm not going to go there because I was going to say something really inappropriate. And I'll just move on to Black Women's Equal Pay Day, the other hashtag everyone should check out, which commemorated the day this year that the average black woman caught up to what a white man made all of last year. Yes, folks, you heard that. It took over 8 months into the next year for black women to earn the same as their white male counterparts. This wage gap thing, because we're at the unbelievably difficult intersection of femaleness and blackness, we get to I guess take the hit twice on that, and we can go further. We can talk about LGBTQ black femmes, and they're even lower. We can talk about trans black femmes, and they're even lower. So we see, you know, the more intersections that you have, the less your earning potential becomes.
Yeah, and people, I get tired of the, 72 cents. That's all women, right?
Yeah.
And that includes white women, which skew that even a little bit higher than 72, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Right.
Yep.
And what are black women? 50 what cents?
60 cents.
60 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm. 60 cents. It will take the average black family 228 years, let me say that again, 228 years to accumulate as much wealth as white households own today. Mm-hmm. Today. So that obviously.
Not this household. I'm just kidding. Not that's the household. Average of a lot of households.
This isn't a white household.
Touche.
Touche. But every
year. You're breaking down the average. God I damn do. It.
That extra 7 months adds up every single year and has been adding to the wealth gap for, that's right, folks, centuries. Back when it was 0 to 100, when we were not paid for any of our work.
Anything.
Mm-hmm. We talk about how women of color compromise a disproportionate number of childcare workforce. Childcare is often, more often than not, a low-wage hourly job with no benefits. In fact, childcare workers, including nannies, daycare center employees, and preschool employees, make almost 40% less than all other workers. So again, we are putting the care of our children into the hands of black women that we refuse to pay an equitable wage.
And are shameless about it. Mm-hmm. And not only are shameless about it, but then will complain when they need government assistance.
Yeah. How dare they?
How dare they? Mm-hmm. After you've left your children with them all day, paying them $10 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
If they're lucky.
Yeah. If we, the first is obviously pay transparency. That's pretty critical. So that you know that you're being underpaid. For the 63% of women of color who work above the minimum wage, but are likely paid less than their white coworkers, pay transparency is crucial to identifying and fighting the internal disparities on the job. So it's important for employers as well. But also the minimum wage is pretty critical because women make up 2/3 of the workforce in minimum wage jobs. Women of color make up 23% of that. So nearly 1 in every 4 people in a minimum wage job is a woman of color. So when we raise that minimum wage, it affects women of color immensely.
Yeah, you're talking about 6% of the population. 6 to 7% of our population are black women.
Mm-hmm.
And they encompass 24% of those minimum wage jobs.
Every time the minimum wage goes up, 37% of working women of color get a raise.
Mm.
Almost 40%. Every time it goes up. Raising the minimum wage to $5 an hour would shrink the gender pay gap by at least 5%. It's huge.
Raising it to what?
15.
Just to 15.
Just to 15 would close that gap by 5%. It's huge. Obviously, the money would go straight back to groceries, for food, for college funds, for affordable childcare so their parents can actually work worry-free. All of these things.
When I think about how women who make minimum wage have, because I make well over minimum wage. I make well, especially considering the fact that I'm a woman who did not finish college. I turn over a tidy sum for a high school graduate.
Mm.
And I still struggle. And I'm saying that, I still struggle because I have 2 kids. And so when I think about women who are making minimum wage or getting caught in these jobs where they're not quite making minimum wage, but they're not really making a wage that allows them to enjoy their life. They're making just enough to be stressed out and I'm at a loss. I'm at a loss because right now the system as it is with the lack of pay transparency, is set up to where they will never, they would never technically know how far behind they are.
That's the point, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely set up to make sure that you don't get ahead of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So anyways, check out that hashtag. I think I find those types of things to be really interesting because it's using statistics to drive the conversation, even picking the day. And I love that. I think that prior to social media, that would not be possible. It wouldn't have the same gravitas that it does in the digital world. So I think that's pretty cool. One thing that has been interesting, obviously, is to compare the fact that we're paid so low as Black women, but on the flip side of it, we are the most educated and we also have become one of the most powerful voting blocks. In 2008 and 2012, Black women voted at higher rates than any subgroup, with 74% of eligible Black women going to the poll 4 years ago in a re-election year where Mitt Romney stood no chance. Still 74% of Black women went to the polls. So whenever I hear people talk about this bullshit about, you know, Black people just need to vote, that'll fix everything. Well, just look at Black women. Just look at Black women. We've been voting, and this shit is still going on. So sit the fuck down and go do some actual work.
Please.
Our last hashtag actually brings us to our next segment, so I'll let Drew introduce the segment.
Are you
going to
do that first? All right.
Yeah, because it's all in one.
Wait, where's my mom? I start over. I'm sorry.
That's actually fitting. Hashtag is Lion Lochte talking about the, I guess, disgraced, if you could call it that, Olympic swimmer, Ryan Lochte, who, if you've been living under a tree somewhere, maybe you have, maybe you haven't, lied about being, quote unquote, robbed at gunpoint while in Rio with fellow swimmers. The aftermath of him lying about it, both on air to authorities and then fleeing the country. I will call it fleeing because that's the only thing I could call running in the cloak of darkness while you left your friends hanging with the bill, fleeing. And obviously, this has caused some ripples out in the world. We do this segment and we actually grade our apologies, Mel. So we usually rank them from, you can give them a 0 up to 10. Drew, do you have the list of what we consider a good apology?
Yeah, so going through, where to go?
Here are the keys. So they have to express regret.
Yep.
They have to explain what went wrong. They have to acknowledge responsibility, declare declaration of repentance. They have to repent. They have to offer repair. They have to request forgiveness, and there has to be some sort of acknowledgement of timeliness, juxtaposition, and modality. So these are the things we grade on for our apologies. I will say no one has gotten above a 3 thus far. So
yeah, there has
take that into account. Most people have gotten, I think when Rod and Cameron on the show, they gave negative marks. So I'm going to read.
This is Ryan Lochte. You got to let a dude do it.
Oh, you're going to do Lochte?
Can you do Lochte? I don't know if I can be stupid enough, but like,
I can. I can do it.
I want to apologize for my behavior last weekend, for not being more careful.
You sound Black right now, though. You have to be like, dude.
No, he sounds like, Justin Bieberish.
How's he? He's got like a, Just
keep your mouth open a lot. That's what he does.
I want to apologize for my behavior last weekend. For not being more careful and candid in how I described the events of that early morning and for my role in taking the focus, away from many athletes fulfilling their dreams of participating in the Olympics. I waited to share these thoughts until it was confirmed that the legal situation was addressed and it was clear that my teammates would be arriving home safely. It's traumatic to be out late with your friends, and this is so, he didn't write this, with your friends in a foreign country with a language barrier and have a stranger point a gun at you and demand money to let you leave. But regardless of the behavior of anyone else that night, I should have been much more responsible in how I handled myself, and for that, I am sorry to my teammates, my fans, my fellow competitors, my sponsors, and the hosts of this great event. I'm very proud to represent my country in Olympic competition, and this was a situation that could and should have been avoided. I accept responsibility for my role in this happening and have learned some valuable lessons. I'm grateful for my U.S. swimming teammates and the USOC, and appreciate all of the efforts of the IOC, the Rio 16 host committee, and the people of Brazil who welcomed us to Rio and worked so hard to make sure that these Olympic Games provided a lifetime of great new memories. There's been already too much said and too many valuable resources dedicated to what happened last weekend. So I hope we spend our time celebrating the great stories and performances of these games and look ahead to celebrating future successes.
That was very Casey Kasem of you.
Ryan
Lochte. It was like dude bro Casey Kasem.
It was dude bro Casey Kasem.
I had to get my ums in. He says um like every
time. He does say um a ton. We're going to play a video of him. I'm going to let you mull that over as his erstwhile apology, if you could call it that. Because Al Roker ran out of Fox Live on TV.
Ooh.
Speaking with Billy Bush about this incident, here's what Mr. Roker had to say. Come on, Al. Where are you? Where is he? Oops. Here we go.
He lied. He lied to you.
Yeah.
He lied to Matt Lauer. Lied to his mom. He left his teammates hanging while he skedaddled.
He embellished some details.
No, no, he lied. No,
some details? Billy,
there was no robbery. There was no pullover. There was nothing. Nobody
there was no
cocked
gun
cocked
to his
head. Hold on, just, he lied.
Okay, calm down. Listen.
Calm down.
If the security guard is standing in front of
he
you.
He lied.
Sure, he embellished
no,
the head.
No.
Money unwillingly embellish. Came out of his pocket.
He they were knocked out. He said they were their car was hit.
That's not true. Gun to the head is a dirty Harry moment. That didn't happen. They weren't sideswiped.
So he created all of these moments to make himself look like.
Okay.
I've stared them down in the face. It was, like you said, the Dirty Harry moment. I mean, come on.
Look at your kids traveling abroad. They're great athletes. They're great swimmers. We don't want an apology from them.
We agree to disagree.
No, I'm just saying. We talk about there's video of vandalism. We haven't seen the video of the vandalism in there. Keir Simmons did a piece this morning. Took them in there. There's nothing damaged in the bathroom.
Look,
there's certain elements, but the general...
Let's keep an open mind. We'll keep an open mind. Hopefully, Ryan will come
up. There was a gun. Look, it's not a shining moment, and there are embellishing moments there. Are total untruths in the end, Al.
He just refused to say the word lie. Like, honestly, refused. Al was like, no, he lied.
But
he embellished.
It was to Billy Bush's face. It was his show.
This is the thing that gets me. So here's a follow-up, and you haven't actually heard this, Drew, but they were back on the air.
Back now with more of today's take.
As mentioned, I missed you guys in Rio, but occasionally on my vacation, I turn on social media. Do you turn it on? You log in, whatever.
Right.
I go
increasingly
on.
Less.
The other day, I log in. And Al Roker is trending. There are memes of Al Roker shaking his drink and ding, ding, ding. What happened, please?
Look, on Friday, we were talking about Ryan Lochte.
Yeah.
And you know,
there's the
FA.com. It was the sound effects. If it wasn't so driving me nuts, it was pretty funny. But, you know, we were talking about Ryan Lochte and whether, you know, he lied or not.
Right.
And we got into
a discussion.
A discussion.
Yeah.
And people, I think what happened was people don't know that, A, we're friends. We've known each other
for a
long time. Mm-hmm. And that this is what we do on this show. But I think because this was such a big deal, you know, I think people were paying more attention to it.
Yeah, my goal was to, and, you know, I spoke with our boss ahead of time. I said, look, my goal is to play a little devil's advocate here because just so we don't have, you know, three opinions the same.
Okay, let me stop right there because.
Lie.
What the fuck is that? What kind of journalistic, like, decision? I went to the guy and I said, I don't believe any of this stuff, but I'm just going to play devil's advocate just so that we all aren't admitting what a fuck shit asshole Ryan Lochte is today on the air. Because he's a white dude.
The devil don't need no advocates.
Like, what in the world? Oh, my gosh.
The devil does not need your help.
I don't even understand it. So, Lochte did sit down with Matt Lauer in what I can only describe as, like, the most surreal of things. And let me say...
The 12th
time Olympic hairdo.
Let me say a few things about this. One is, like, he went and lied to Billy Bush, which is one thing. I mean, we just heard Billy Bush ain't shit. He just told us that he ain't
shit.
But then... Then he made the mistake of lying to Matt Lauer. Now, yeah, people cannot like Matt Lauer all they want, but he's the real deal. This motherfucker is an actual journalist. He actually goes and interviews heads of state and shit. You don't get to lie to him and then think you're going to sit down and he's going to take it easy on you. Because Matt did not come to play. So we'll listen to a little bit of this because it's so absurd.
Now taking responsibility for what he says was immature behavior in Rio, nearly a week after he and his three teammates claimed that they were robbed at gunpoint. We asked Lochte about that and what happened when he was confronted by security guards.
What was your tone? The police said in their press conference that you were angry, that you were belligerent, and perhaps that the security guard was worried you might get aggressive. Is that fair? A fair characterization?
Not me getting aggressive. I mean, that's not really my...
So all the rest of it was true? Because if you said, well, not the aggressive part, but everything else, you got it down.
And everything else, yeah.
It's not me is getting mad and angry and like wanting to fight or anything like that. But I was upset that we got pulled out of the taxi for, I thought, something that nothing, like, there's no reason for a gun to be pulled out for us for doing nothing.
But Gunner, in his statement to police, did say that you got into a heated argument and discussion with that security guard.
I was upset. There was no reason for us to be sitting down with a gun pointed to us for nothing that we did.
But at any time during that exchange, Ryan, when you were that upset and terrified, as you just said, do you think you posed a threat to that security guard that would have made him believe he needed to continue to have that gun out of its holster?
So to be clear, Matt Lauer just brought Blue Lives Matter right to Brazil. Did y'all hear this?
Mm-hmm.
He
yes,
feared.
He did.
He feared for his life, you guys. Wow. Wow.
You know, he knows the language. He knows the lines.
When I got up and I started, you know, being like, this is using some words, this is BS, like we shouldn't be like treated like this, like there's no way, like, we want to get back in the car. We want to go back. Like, that's why I got it heated. And, you know, the guy probably drawled his gun from that. And then once he did, you can definitely see me go like this. And that's when we sat down.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is the first version of the story you told, Ryan, was much more about the mean streets of Rio.
Yo, Matt is not playing, y'all.
This is the setup.
Matt,
it's painful to listen to Ryan Lochte talk. Can I say that?
He can't speak English. What is drawl? What is that?
This setup, it's two questions back to back in under a minute, and Lochte, like, punts them both.
Yeah.
And the version we're hearing now is much more about a negotiated settlement to cover up some dumb behavior.
And that's why I'm taking full responsibility for it. Is because I over-exaggerated that story. And if I never done that, we wouldn't be in this mess.
What about the people of Rio? You know, they dealt with all the headlines going into the games and about pollution and violence and crime. And here comes this story with one of the highest profile U.S. athletes saying, I got held up at gunpoint on the streets of Rio. What would you say to them now?
How sorry I am. And my deepest apologies. They put on a great games. They did everything. The people of Rio or Brazil, the authorities, everyone there, they put on a great games. And my immature, intoxicated behavior tarnished that a little.
When you saw the news coverage of Gunner and Jack being taken off that plane at the airport, and you knew, and you've just said to me, they didn't damage anything in that gas station.
And
you're sitting at home in the United States, safe and sound. How did it make you feel?
Hurt. I mean,
this motherfucker just said he felt hurt.
Yeah, fuck this shit, dude.
He is... He's Tonya Harding.
He's really obscene. So,
I apologize for my immature intoxicated.
I can't even play any more of it because honestly, it just goes on and on. But breaking news here on the show: just a few hours ago, it was announced that Ryan Lochte will be joining season 23 of Dancing with the Stars.
Why not? Why the fuck not?
So he went to a foreign country, vandalized as a representative of this country, vandalized, lied about it, not only to authorities, but also to the United States press, again, as a representative of our country, fled the country, left his friends hanging high and dry, and he got a job.
because he's still a white man. Like, he doesn't stop being white.
That's the American way. That's the white American way, right?
Lord have mercy.
You know, stop being white.
The two fucking dudes that got accused of this robbery got, like, beat up by the fucking police. Like, one of them was in the hospital and shit. They're suing the IOC for $10 million, 10 million reals, I should say, because the IOC's contract with the host nation says they are solely responsible for all of the athletes' behavior.
Yep.
So this reflects, and like when I say this reflects on the IOC, like this is the kind of shit you lose medals for. He's already lost all four endorsements.
Mm-hmm.
Dumbass.
Which is shocking he even had them. But something I also, shout out to Shirley from Chonella.
I want to be a role model.
I came across, she brought this out to me. It's from well, I'll
look. Oh, for those little kids.
Well, and that's some dumb shit.
I know. People can see it in many different directions. All we know is there was a gun.
And that's dumb.
There was a gun.
And that's dumb.
There was a gun.
And that's dumb. Were you robbed?
I don't know. All I know is I was a drunk frat boy. One night.
Why'd you do that?
I don't know why. No why. I had too much to drink. The entire world had to watch this for the last week. Still intoxicated. I think so. I know so. I over-exaggerated. These kids. These shenanigans, I'm gonna make sure that this never happened again.
When you're drunk, you can't remember if you try. Were you pissing on a bush, or were you fighting 100 bad guys?
Why? There was no pullover.
He lied.
There was nothing.
He lied. He left his teammates hanging while he skedaddled. In the end, Al, he shouldn't have lied to his mom. His mom.
He's
drunk fat boy for one night.
Why'd you do that?
I don't know why, no why. I had too much to drink. The entire world had to watch this for the last week. Under that influence, still intoxicated. I think so, I know so. I over-exaggerated these tactics, these shenanigans. I'm gonna make sure that this never happened again.
Okay, so at least that was a better way of looking
at it. You know, and I meant to comment, because you stopped it before it got to that point.
Oh, yeah.
I'll make sure this never happens again. What? You get drunk and trash a fucking bathroom and lie about it? Yeah. Make sure that never happens again, Ryan Lochte. Thank you.
Well, now you are well-versed in the Ryan Lochte mess, Mel, and you know now. Was it worse than you thought, or about what you thought?
Well, it's about what I thought, because I kind of checked out of that really early. Because I remember from the 2012 Olympics, I was like, he looks like a real dick. He definitely looked like a dick that started shit then. And I,
the 12 times,
I didn't believe him. I didn't, it was like, there's no way there had to be more to this story. So him being this person is not at all shocking to me.
Not at all.
It's pretty awful.
Yeah.
I'm not even, if it had not resulted in somebody actually being hurt, I'd be laughing at it.
Right.
But it did result in somebody being hurt. And I just don't understand. I don't understand how a person's mind works like that. But then after hearing him speak, I guess I don't think his mind works.
Period.
You know, one of the things I remembered early on was and maybe it was Good Morning America, where they said, I don't think he has I can't remember the exact terminology that they used, but basically they said that he was not smart enough to put together a story like that, and they used that to support why they believed him. because they said he was too stupid to lie that effectively. And I was like, no, he's a little rich boy. I think that's right about in his wheelhouse. So, I don't know. For me, he just proved... That was just what I always thought of him. So, you know, it wasn't a big surprise to me.
Mm. Me either.
Well, our next segment actually is slightly Lochte themed as well.
I thought Receipts is Lochte themed?
Yeah. We got receipts, we got receipts. Yeah, we got receipts.
The Twitter act in three plays is Lochte?
It is. So we do have a Twitter act in three plays. Under the We Got Receipts heading. So SportsCenter tweeted out, update, Ryan Lochte's teammates told police that the robbery story has been fabricated by Lochte. So at Doyle Noir quote tweeted it and said, thug, period. Pretty witty. black dude.
That's kind of like almost
just like, oh, he's such a thug.
Yeah, but I want to say it's become a really like glorious black Twitter,
oh, yeah,
like
for sure.
Quote tweet response.
Absolutely. Thug. So, white dude Chase at CGlowCa9 says, wait, someone is a thug because they got into a fight? Thinking emoji. That's the second tweet. The third is Doyle Noir responding. According to you yourself, yes. And he quote tweets a tweet from last year where SportsCenter said J.R. Smith ejected after his hit on Jay Crowder. Somebody said GOAT, and Chase, who just chastised somebody for calling Ryan Lochte a thug, said thug.
I love that dude went and searched his timeline for the word thug and actually found it, and found it in response to another sports athlete getting in a fight.
Fucking brilliant.
It's too much. It's
That's awesome. My favorite thing to do. Like, one, Twitter gets a lot of things wrong, but updating that search function, God. My favorite thing to do to use the search function is when someone tries to call me out on some sort of racist shit or, you know, talking about how we're all blah, blah, blah. I love to search things like their name and Tamir Rice.
Yes.
Or their name and whatever other adult Negro the cops decided to turn into Swiss cheese, and see absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. That is probably one of my favorite ways to shut a motherfucker down.
There was
because you don't care. You just don't want to hear what I have to say.
Yeah. Who was it that came trying to defend fucking Miley when she was having the... Not Miley.
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift. Or
Selena Gomez. We need to talk about important things. Important things. She was talking about shoes yesterday. Just stop. Ain't seen nary a justice, not nary a hashtag, nary a cause you've been out here caping for. So just stop.
Yeah.
Be nice to my friend. Say that shit and keep it cute in these streets. Ridiculous.
Yeah, there ain't nothing better than using somebody's own timeline as a weapon against them.
Oh, it's great. It is my favorite thing. I hate how much I love it.
No, don't. Please.
The interwebs are
forever. I love watching it. Don't stop. Do not stop.
The interwebs are forever.
Because, you know, I will find a receipt. I have a lot of things to do. I have described what my average day is like. I have a lot on my plate, but I'm never too busy to pull a receipt.
There was a day, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago. I can't remember what Leslie was doing. But she woke up and she's like, oh, son of a bitch. I got time today and you all going to find it. Someone's going to get it. I got time. I really do.
Yo, I unloaded on like 12 people that day. Yeah. I was like, I'm not working. I'm going to sit on the couch with my tablet, and y'all going to hear from me today. Don't try me.
I don't drink it, but I'm making a lot of tea.
Don't try me. Don't. Do me a favor and don't.
As much as I hate to do it. So, Leslie, what you gonna do when armed SWAT marshals come after you for a 30-year-old student loan?
I don't know what I'm gonna do. To be totally honest, I have no idea.
You know, and I'll get more into the article, but like student loans, it's still the only fucking thing you can't bankrupt from. It sticks with you for fucking ever. You can't get away from it. It's there forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. So here's what the U.S. government says about student loan that you may have been tardy about paying back. If your loan's placed in a collection agency, you will be responsible for costs incurred to get payment. The holder of your loan can take other actions to collect as well. These other actions can involve withholding your tax refund or, in some cases, garnishing your wages. And this week in Texas, they began to involve federal agents in combat gear busting fucking debtors' houses, doors down, and arresting them. Literally.
Paul, it's really like we live in 13th century England.
Yeah.
It's obscene.
Or 1984. Like, for real. The book, not the year.
So Paul Aker had this happen to him. Seven armed U.S. marshals arrived at his door in Houston and arrested him on the spot, took him to jail. Are you ready for this? Over $1,500 outstanding from 1987. $1,500.
This dude probably took like a computer class one time. Like, straight up. It's so obscene.
I know it ain't the black guy who did, but guess the race.
Oh, you know he's black.
Oh, fuck him. You wouldn't bust in a door with seven SWAT dudes for a white kid that owns $1,500. They wouldn't even go on that way.
Mm-mm.
The whole thing's just gross.
Yeah, so I was wondering how they even got to do this, but the federal government has been contracting out student loan collections to private debt collectors, and they are allowed to deploy U.S. Marshals as their enforcement arm. That's how they put
That's
this
insane.
All together. It's crazy. Mm-mm-mm.
Insane.
Around Houston, the better way involves 1,200 to 1,500 arrest warrants. Student debt is at an all-time high in the U.S., where students hold an average of $35,000 in federal debt, according to analysis. So you know that it's on the rise. You understand that people aren't paying not because... And that's the other thing about student loans. Like, you think people aren't paying because they don't want to? Like, you think they're out, like, gallivanting with the money? And obviously, $1,500 from 1987, the dude didn't know he owed the fucking money. Like, really?
Right.
Ugh.
Yeah, the other thing, like, I'm not saying it's unfair, but they don't tell you shit. Like, they give you the money and you go to school. And, like, at least in my generation, I barely understood simple fucking interest. And then, like, throw in, like, forbearance versus deferment. And, like, you know, there's a significant difference. Like, forbearance means, like, you accrue interest, but you're not paying anything back. You're just, your principal and your interest are going up and up and up and up and up. Deferment is, like, I didn't accrue interest. I, like, you know, went back to school for 6 months or whatever. But, like, they don't tell you this shit. And they just fucking, you know, for me, I remember anytime I got in trouble, anytime financially it was difficult, first thing that dropped was student loans. And you get fines and fees. I've paid them fucking whatever I borrowed. I've paid that back and then some. And I still owe, like, another 20 grand. It's a rag. And now I'm not, because the rate goes up and down based on, like, the federal interchange fee. So right now my student loans are like 3%, you know, like 2%. I have no interest in, like, paying them back faster, but when the rate goes up, I start putting more down on it. They're just awful. A SWAT team, you know how much money it costs to deploy those seven people? Costs more than the $1,500 that the fucking guy owes.
It's ridiculous.
Couldn't you call the SWAT team and said,
it's really just about penalizing.
Yeah, it's not about the
money. People who are not of means and typically, that's black people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ain't that the truth? All right. Well, we do need a palate cleanser here, though.
Yes.
For sure.
Isn't that your segment?
Yeah,
I'm
trying to do it here. Yeah.
I don't got the music yet. I got to do my sound bites.
Mm-hmm. I bet you do.
Bass.
Lies
and dreams of passion
running through my mind.
And all the while I think of you.
White lies.
A very strange reaction. The more I see, the more I do.
Okay, so for our hidden history segment, we are going to talk about lit history. This is from Blavity, actually, 13 Black inventors and innovators never to be forgotten. The first is Dr. Charles Drew, who's a physician, researcher, and surgeon who completely revolutionized the understanding of blood plasma. His work led to the invention of blood banks. Dr. Charles Drew, shout out to you.
Wow.
Number two is Lewis Latimer. Born to parents who fled slavery, Lewis Howard Latimer helped draft the patent for Alexander Graham Bell's design of the telephone. He also patented a carbon filament for the incandescent light bulb that helped make electric lighting practical and affordable for the average household. Now, I doubt that his descendants are
not
steeped in
that.
The wealth yeah. that Bell and Edison's are steeped in, but okay. Garrett Morgan only had a sixth grade education with an innate mechanical mind and an entrepreneurial spirit. Most of us know him because of his invention of the three-position traffic signal, but Morgan's patents also include a hair straightening chemical, a gas mask, and a revamped sewing machine. Wow, amazing.
You know, we've talked at some point before about, I wonder how many inventions and things from the dawn of time through, you know, the 1900s were stolen from black people that we just attribute to white people.
All of them. I say it all the time. Eli Whitney's my number one. Like, that motherfucker did not invent no fucking cotton gin. Why the fuck would he care how quickly the cotton gets picked?
You know, I don't think we put it on the show to talk about. In fact, we might have skipped it. But this year is the sesquicentennial of, I think, Jack Daniel's whiskey.
Oh, yeah. And we did talk about it on the show.
I don't think we did talk about it on the
show. We did.
Oh, we did? Okay. Mm-hmm. But just, you know, they're trying to now have some sort of, like,
reconciliation.
Oh, you know, even though it's called Jack Daniel's, that was Jack and Daniel, the two slaves that made the shit for us.
No, no, no. Jack and Daniel are two white people, but they were taught how to, because there's this myth that all of this came from the old country. So it was brought over from Scotland, it was brought over from Ireland, and that's how it made it into the South, and that's how people learned everything. In reality, most of the time they learned these trades from black slaves that were already doing these things.
Right.
And that is how the Jack Daniels actually got their recipe, was from a black slave that taught Jack and Daniel how to make this whiskey.
So, lots of shit like that. Mm-hmm. Hidden.
Mm-hmm. Frederick McKinley Jones invented an automatic refrigeration system for long-haul trucks and railroad cars. He also invented an air conditioning unit for military field hospitals, a self-starting gas engine, and was posthumously awarded the National Medal of Technology in 1991. He was the first black inventor to ever receive that honor, again, after he died. So there's that. James West, in 1962, he developed the electret transductor technology, later used in 90% of contemporary microphones. So what we are talking on right now is thanks to James West. Of course, George Washington Carver. He was a scientist and inventor, discovered over 300 different uses for peanuts, including making cooking oil, axle grease, and printer's ink. Very interesting. George Alcorn developed the imaging X-ray spectrometer. The device helps scientists better understand why materials are composed of when they cannot be physically broken down. He was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame in 2015. Lonnie G. Johnson, the man who invented the goddamn super soaker. Let's give him a round of applause.
Oh, man, that guy, not only did he invent the super, that guy's a fucking, like, black billionaire success story.
Yeah, he's an Sold Air Force shit. And NASA engineer.
Yeah, but he made his own company. Mm-hmm. Somebody fucking, like, ripped, like, Nerf tried to rip this shit off.
Yep.
He sued the fuck out of him, got, like, $100 million, did all kinds of other shit.
Yeah, because he was former Air Force and NASA engineer. He was like, I have money to pay for a
patent lawyer.
Not just for a patent lawyer and to sue the fuck out of you. Thanks a lot, Mattel, or whoever it was.
Yeah, yeah.
That was fantastic.
So good.
Good success stories.
Dr. Patricia Bath, who was the first black woman to complete a residency in ophthalmology and the first black female doctor to receive a medical patent. She invented the laser phaco probe for cataract treatment in 1986. Shout out to you. Ooh, she look, her eyebrows are on fleek.
She invented a laser, people.
A fucking laser.
A fucking laser.
Get it together, people. Percy Julian was a pioneer in the chemical synthesis of medicinal drugs such as cortisone, steroids, and birth control pills. Amazing. Mark Dean is credited with helping to develop the color PC monitor, the industry standard architect's system bus, and the first gigahertz chip. He holds 3 of IBM's original 9 PC patents and currently holds more than 20 patents total.
Wow. This all reminds me, you weren't on, Mel, but we have our bit in the beginning. We're talking about folks. We had a letter from Khadija, and she's like, you know, like, what do you do? I'm an aerospace engineer.
Oh.
That's a rocket scientist.
By the way,
you know,
I'm a fucking rocket scientist.
Put some respect on it. The last two are Benjamin Banneker, who's a scientist, author, astronomer, mathematician, and farmer. He's responsible for the first clock built in the New World when he was 22 years old. It kept perfect time for 40 fucking years. He successfully predicted an eclipse in 1789. And from 1872 to 1802, he published an annual farmer's almanac for which he did all the calculations himself. And finally, Madam C.J. Walker, who's the first American woman of any color to become a self-made millionaire, the pioneer of the black hair care industry. She's everything. So there's 13 people, some of whom you may have heard of, but lots that you didn't, doing black people that have done amazing things.
Please clap.
I
was thinking of the hidden history, and we're talking about diversity. I thought it'd be a good time to talk about the John's new sponsor.
Oh, yeah.
So we have a sponsor now, and I don't know if you know, but most children books tend to be white, right? I think a study at one point said that only 7% of kids' books in 2012 had a non-white protagonist. And at the beginning of the show, you were talking about the mirror and the window and the importance of representation. And so we have a white a friend in our life, a child, I would say a I'm an uncle yes. to this individual, yeah. And I'm wanting to find ways. In fact, I said to you before we got this sponsor, I was talking to you. I said, man, what are we going to do to make sure that this young man, you know, I have a t-shirt that says raise better white people, right? So I know we have white listeners. And I think sometimes, you know, you were talking about the mirror versus the window. This is the window, right? What are white kids going to do to be able to see and interact and engage with other non-white individuals, if 93% of the kids' books are all white folks? So Culture Test wants to make it easier for families to connect with diverse children's books through a subscription service. Every month, they will send a 2 to 3 books for children's ages 3 to 8. And John listeners, and John listeners, can get 15% off their first subscription box when you enter the code JAWN. That's J-A-W-N. So we can all agree that representation is important. Likewise, the window and allowing white children to engage with and interact with non-white characters and protagonists. So Culture Chest wants to make that happen. So sign up, use the code JAWN. You'll get 15% off your first box. And again, that's 2 to 3 books for aged 3 to 8 children that comes every month. And let's help make a better diverse world. And we're getting a box. And yes. It's going to be going to this young white man who is in our life. And I promise we're going to raise better.
Yes.
And we're not raising him. He's not our child, but yeah. We're going to have an impact on this young man's life. And Culture Chest is hopefully going to be a part of that. So thank you for them for being a sponsor. And Johnners, check out Culture Chest. Their link and details will be in the site. And again, use code JAWN for a 15% discount. Mm-hmm. And what is the website? I feel that's like the worst.
It's culturechest.com.
All right. Culturechest.com.
And you can follow them on Twitter and Instagram at Culture Chest on both of those. We'll have those links obviously in the show notes as well.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to getting the first box and opening it up and seeing
what the
I don't want to use his name, so I'm going to call him Young Master Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Yeah, Young Master Fauntleroy.
He is such a Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Just call him
He's like
Prince,
blonde to the bone.
Prince George. Just call him that.
He's adorable. He's so cute. He fucking loves us too.
Yeah, he's great. I did want to talk a little bit about Amy Schumer because of this whole Kurt Metzger thing. Now, obviously, So, you know, Kurt Metzger made a bunch of comments about sexual assault, and he committed sexual assault, and all this stuff has been going on around him. And he was a writer on her show, on Amy Schumer's show, and a bunch of other stuff. Now, I actually don't want to talk about Kurt Schumer because whatever. I wanted to talk about Amy Schumer because I'm slightly fascinated and mostly just really irritated by her. But this situation with her friend Kurt has got me in my feels a bit. I'm going to just read a little bit of her statements about Kurt and the fallout from the situation. She says, quote, "It was hard." Okay, it was hard for her. "Because Kurt is my friend, and yeah, he's a great writer. And I know that he's in a lot of pain. Basically, he was like a troll on the internet. I feel so bad for trolls. Like, how unhappy are you? But people don't know the full story. They don't know where Kurt's coming from, and I disagree with everything. Not the essence of what he said. Like, it's like, yes, of course, it would be great if every rape was perfect and we all got to go right to this police station and due process. But that's not how it works. There's so many different ways that somebody can be sexually assaulted. It was really unfair of him to write that, and I disagree with what was said and how he said it. He apologized to those girls. He's been in touch with them. He's in touch with them. He's in touch with her now. He feels completely differently about it, and it's his story to tell." She added that Metzger's not currently working for her show because it's not in production. "I can understand the instinct of how can someone like that have someone on their staff? From what I know, from what they know. But I know Kurt, and I know he's a really good person, and that this will change him. And he's not on my staff. I don't have any staff right now. I don't have any writers. There's no job to fire him from. But any sort of action being demanded of me by these strangers was really frustrating. I don't want to be spoken to like that. And what's great is I don't have to be."
Every time I say that mush-faced bitch looks like the fucking ultimate warrior, I never, because I really, when it comes down to women, I like to take the high road when I insult them, and yep. I like to take the high road and sometimes just not insult them and just leave them alone. But that motherfucker, I relish the opportunities to go at her because she is pure, unadulterated trash. And
yeah.
Every time she opens her fuck-ass mouth, more trash flies out. And fuck her
forever. I don't know what people think about people who are rapists or who, you know, commit other types of sexual assaults. They don't just spring out. They don't spring out the ground from the rape patch. Everybody knows there's every rapist. Someone knows them, and it doesn't matter. And most of them are loved by the people in their circle. It doesn't matter that you know and love this motherfucker. He is still a piece of shit, and that doesn't change. So, who cares if he's your friend? I'm sure the women who he's assaulted don't care that he's your friend.
Nope.
It doesn't matter. And yeah, you do have an obligation. You do fucking have an obligation as a human being to be compassionate to the women that he's hurt.
Mm. Yeah. You know, and the fucking, the whole thing that Amy did, like, I look at it in its totality, because she first came out with like tweets that were like, oh, I don't agree, and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, he's not working for me. We're not shooting anymore. Stop talking to me. And then she did the whole article and like, this is really hard. Like, to me, the whole thing felt kind of like a white fragility, like promotional dance. Like, you're getting attention drawn to you, playing a victim and like, oh, stop tweeting me. It's so hard. And he's not working in the show. Like,
what do you want from me?
Yeah. And like, it did nothing. You literally did nothing. You didn't condemn him. You didn't fucking talk about victims' fucking rights. You didn't donate anything. You didn't do shit. All you did was like, look at me, look at me, look at me. And like, I just understand. Like you said, you did this white fragility, like, ooh, 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 for ratings and exposure without doing anything at all about the fucking dickbag you hired.
And she's a fucking liar, too, because her whole, like, well, he's not on staff because she's talking about men's, like, basically she's talking about, what's the
hiatus?
No, she's talking, it is a hiatus, but she's talking about, like, just choice of words, basically. She's
deframing her language.
Yeah, she's mincing words, and it doesn't have. I mean, people were looking for her to say, "I'm not going to associate with this person," and they won't have anything to do with my work anymore. And I don't think that if you, as you like to fucking put your fat ass out everywhere and tout yourself as some, you know, feminist fucking messiah for white women, that's something they would expect of that person who has put themselves in that position.
Yeah.
So don't fucking try and say now, oh, don't ask me what I should do about this man who's condoning rape actively, openly, in public, and I paid to write for my show. Right. Of course they're going to fucking ask you, bitch.
Do something.
Who the fuck else are they going to ask?
Yeah.
Him?
Right.
Like, what the fuck are you talking about right now?
Where are they supposed to go?
I don't feel any sort of pull to defend sexual abusers.
Nope.
I just don't. I am totally fine. And even if I know you, if you did some shady shit, you're going to have to scrap that out. And no, I'm not going to spit. Well, I know him and I don't think he meant it that way. He may not have meant it that way, but that doesn't change the fact of how his victim feels. And I'm not going to sit there and argue with the person who was there with how they feel. And there, you know, there may be people who would be angry with me about that. And that's fine. Don't be a fucking creep. Don't be a fucking rapist. And you won't have those problems. Sure. Don't be ambiguous in your intention. And don't be ambiguous in how you approach people and the people who you approach.
Absolutely. And the last...
When somebody said, you don't have these problems when you accept a woman's no.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line. No man, when a woman has said, no, thank you, I'm not interested, and you say, oh, okay, and go about your business, they don't have these problems.
Yeah, that's, you know, and I don't want to talk, she talked before about Nate and the, you know, issues he's having. And, but, like, I said to Leslie, like, I'm a dude. I've been in a situation where I now have language and understanding to look back as a, I don't know, 16-year-old in high school and be like, man, that was really not appropriate. That was not good for this young woman. I'm uncomfortable with what happened, this and that. And I can own that. I can really be like, okay, I'm not this horrible, awful, you know, I didn't rape anybody, but I participated in something that wasn't healthy and normal and good and, you know, call it like boys, whatever. But I didn't have the language then. I'm not going to like hate myself. And I'm also not going to hear and lie. I'm not going to sit here and say that didn't fucking happen. I'm not going to sit here and try to say it was her fault or this or that. And it, like, moving forward, like, I recognized pretty early on, like, okay, this is what I'm personally comfortable with. And, like, I just, the number of people in our society that as men are justifying having sexual relations with a woman that is either incapacitated, drunk, you know, in some way just not cogent enough to give consent, and the justification for it. My only conclusion is they must have done the same thing and they're trying to feel fucking okay about it.
Well, that's the thing. When we start talking about rape, as women have become more vocal in what we're comfortable with, it's not that men, quote unquote, want to be rapists. It's that they don't want to face up to the fact that they themselves have put women in situations where they felt unsafe or where they felt that their no would not have been accepted. Like, that is a very real dilemma, maybe, that men have to face, that they have done things where women didn't feel safe in their company. You have done some creepy ass shit, some potentially raping ass shit, and you have to own that. That's a very difficult thing to own, because nobody wants to look themselves in the mirror and say, hey, I'm really a piece of shit and women are scared of me.
Yeah, I had to have a come to Jesus conversation with a friend, and it was really hard, but I had to do it. I'm like, listen, you know, this is the, you know, I don't want to be like disrespectful, but this is like the second or third different woman in a period of time that has come to me with concerns about you and what you're doing. And I gotta be honest, I'm your bro, but this is like fucking stalkery. Like, what's going on? Like, this is really like, and that was a hard conversation. Like, a really like, but like, what am I going to not do it? Right? Like, that's like, and I think that's part of the whole conversation. And that's what, I haven't listened to it, but Leslie, you said, was so good about Chris and Deepalm on
The Insanity Check this week. Just was so good of them talking about
men talking about this openly. And I think, and I don't say part of the problem, but like, you look at other incidents and what's going on now and various things, and there's this assumptive that if somebody were, so let's take Nate's case, and if he were to be like, you know what, I now know and have language and tools and vision and clarity and understanding to be able to say that what happened back then was inappropriate. I didn't know that then. I'm going to be compassionate to my 19-year-old self and say, I didn't know that, but it was very wrong. But in order to do that, that opens him up to like civil liability. The woman's heirs or someone else is going to sue him for whatever. And it's like the whole system makes it almost like in his financial best interest to be continuing like, nah, it wasn't anything, you know, I didn't rape her. It wasn't a big deal.
I think the other thing that has to, there have been so many conversations that have sprung up from this. And one of the things that we have to look at is how, number one, it's not profitable to admit that you were wrong. It is not, we have to also address the misogyny that comes with that. When we talk about, like, in his situation, if we're talking about the Nate Parker situation, we look at the fact that he's accused of raping a white woman. And there's a lot of implications where there are historical implications where once upon a time, all a white woman had to say was, he raped me and that black man was dead. So we have those images in our head on one side, but we also have the very, very real view that white women are easy. Mm-hmm. And so, and if you're a black athlete, if you're a black, you know, whatever in college, there are white girls who want to sample black dick and have buyer's remorse and blah, blah, blah. And it's very easy to sell that story, but that's still rooted in a level of misogyny, especially when you are pursuing these women under the guise of promiscuity, right, and then turning right around and saying that they're lying about you raping them when you had sex with them and they were damn near passed out drunk. Mm-hmm. It's just not, and those are the conversations. The reason that we don't have these conversations is because they are uncomfortable, and you have to admit a lot of ugly shit
about yourself as a person, about how you probably view masculinity, about how you view women, about how you view race. And these are all conversations that we're having separately amongst ourselves and not having in the open with each other. And also, even when we broach them on this with this hands off, well, I'm just going to say how people feel, but I'm not necessarily going to put it out there that this is detestable. It's disgusting. Full stop. You're a fucking rapist and this is not okay. Mm. And that's a problem.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And it's just, the whole thing has just been sickening to me. And this idea that it's on the women to just have to do something about it.
Yeah, and I don't.
Yeah, you have to do something
about,
different.
I will say, I will be of the unpopular opinion that I don't give a fuck about Nick Parker or that damn movie. Get a fucking book and read about Nat Turner. Mm. I'm sorry. That is my. This is not necessarily the opinion of Interracial John. It is definitely the opinion of Beauty Jackson.
Get it's welcomed here.
I don't, yes, more
I do not
here.
Give a. When you have put a woman in an unsafe position. It's not incumbent on me to make you feel better about yourself because you did a good thing. Like, how long have we as black women had to deal with men who were admitted rapists and had to deal with their bullshit in the struggle? You know, look at Aldrich Cleaver was an admitted fucking rapist. He was an admitted rapist. And people don't talk about that. They talk about his place in black history and do not talk about the fact that he was awful to women. So I know, while I know that there are white women who have done this certain thing to black men that have cost them their lives, I also know that there are black men who have raped women, not only white women, but black women as well. Mm. So I cannot, like, you have to scrap that out. And from what he, by his, from his words, not even from her words, from his words,
yep.
From what I see, that was rape. What I read, that was rape. And I don't care about what, how things were skewed. His words that explained it to me, that was rape. And that is the part I can't fuck with and will not fuck with.
Absolutely. I was talking to
Drew, on the bootleg. Sorry, kids.
I was talking about Drew about this earlier today, and he said what you said, which is like, there's no, you know, there's nothing to win by, you know, being honest and you know, reconciling or doing the right thing. And I don't know if that's true because nobody fucking does it. I don't know what would happen. I think that there is room in our society for a man to say, a man like Nate Parker to say, when I was 19 years old, I did something and my 19-year-old self did not understand what consent meant.
Mm-hmm.
My 19-year-old self thought I was doing the right thing, but I now, as a grown man, can look and see that I was wrong. I can look back and see that with my 2020 hindsight vision and know that that 19-year-old was wrong in that action.
People forgive convicted rapists.
You can do that. This is not fucking rocket science. It's not hard, and it doesn't make you an evil person now. What makes you an evil person now is trying to pretend like you didn't do anything wrong then. That's what makes you fucking evil. I am, as Drew said, you know, we're Unitarian Universalists, and this idea of the dignity and worth of all human beings is a very tough thing to reconcile in our faith. It's something I struggle with all the time, and I work really hard at it. And so for me, like, I always believe there's room for forgiveness, but the person that needs a forgiveness has to actually repent. Yeah. And that's what we've been waiting for. You don't get to spend 17 years denying you raped somebody and then say, I'm disappointed black people aren't supporting me. Listen, let me tell you one thing I know about black women. We don't do this white feminism TM bullshit. I don't care who the fuck you raped. Because let me tell you, if you raped her, I know for fucking sure you will be okay raping me.
Absolutely.
And if you're okay writing off her pain, you'd be okay writing off mine too. We don't play that.
And the thing that has stuck in my mind when I look at him being glib and dismissive about what's going on and kind of having this woe is me pity party that I don't think that is discussed enough is, and this, you know, is a very sensitive part for a lot of people, but this woman killed herself.
Yep.
And I don't care. I don't give a fuck that his movie might not do well.
No.
This woman is dead. And regardless of what other problems she may have had, there is no way being sexually assaulted did not factor into this.
Not just being being sexually assaulted and watching your rapist thrive. Watching your rapist succeed. Watching your rapist, literally, let me say one thing, too, and I've actually been meaning to write a piece about this, but I'll talk about it a little bit here. But, you know, I knew about this situation with Nate for a long time. And when it was announced the movie was going to go to Sundance, I'm in a small Facebook group with a bunch of black women. And we had started talking about it. I mean, like 8 months ago, we were all like, I was like, yo, this fucking Nate Parker dude, y'all know he raped somebody, right? And we started talking about it. And I had said that I don't want to say anything. I don't want to tweet about it. I don't want, because nobody was saying anything about it then. Mm-hmm. And I saw, you know, friends of mine supporting him, supporting his movie. I didn't say anything to them either. And looking back and thinking about it, I realized that I literally, and all of us said the same thing, like, I'm not going to be the one to say something, because then all of that vitriol is going to come at me.
And how often do we have to deal with that?
How often? And I was like, I'm not doing it. I'm not going to be the black woman married to a white man that's coming after Nate Parker. I'm not doing it.
Well, and, you know, I have that moment a lot, especially, and I think this is just something, a dilemma that you face when you have a higher level of visibility, because sometimes you can just see, especially when you start dealing with like social media or whatever, you can see that mushroom cloud. I had that very, and this is a very different thing, but I know this is something that you felt very strongly about as well. When I saw the picture of Ellen, Ellen posted that picture, I saw that picture and I completely logged out of Twitter, because I was not going to be able to sit on Twitter and not say anything, but I really did not want to be, I didn't want to deal with it, I guess, for lack of a better term. Yeah. I didn't want to be the one that had to kind of handle that fallout. I didn't want to deal with the explosion. I didn't want to deal with the vitriol that comes with it. I just didn't want to. I didn't want to be the source, but I also could not in good conscience just sit on social media and talk and tweet and act like that didn't happen either. Like, that's not. So I just logged out. And I think a lot of us tend to do that, where we're like, okay, I'm not necessarily going to be the one to talk about this, but I know it's coming. Like, you can see the storm coming.
You saw Leslie, right?
I saw Leslie.
I mean, I there's been, like, for real, like, it's going on 2 years, and there's been different things that get viral or blow up. You've been quoted in Blavity and HuffPost and USA or whatever. This probably was your most retweeted tweet ever. It was over 3,000. And you didn't.
It was one tweet.
You didn't tag Ellen.
Did not.
You didn't.
I wasn't
hashtag
even talking about
anything.
Ellen. I wasn't even talking about
and
Ellen.
The tweet wasn't even about Ellen. The tweet was you saying, "I'm disappointed with the number of black individuals caping for Ellen." That's it. I'm disappointed. Because it got retweeted 3,000 times. The fucking shit. It was a nonstop stream for fucking 48 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously. And like, the thing that, like, I don't know, like, I kind of expect the fucking redneck racist fucking dick bags, you know, like, seriously, like, once a day there's like, kill yourself, N-word, like, literally she gets once a day some just fucking, you know, American evil fucking Confederate flag asshole that's like, you're a fucking worthless N-word, get a job, like, every day. Like, you expect that. This was, and again, this is not my intra-community dialogue, but it seemed harder on Leslie because it was a lot of black folk, man.
Well, yeah. Well, because the thing is, we get into number one, the people that we like and the people who we consider allies or who don't mean harm. And I don't necessarily think that Ellen meant harm, but I do think it was very stupid. And I think that you are very insulated from black people if somehow you think that jumping on a black man's back like he's a fucking horse is not going to go over poorly. It just looked bad. I feel like in 2016, it's not like we're segregated where we shouldn't be kind of mixing it up with more black people. If you had black people that you consulted with, or if you had just minorities in general, when we when we interact with more people, we get a, we get more of a sense of compassion. We get a sense of how they communicate. We get a sense of the things that upset them and the things that, that don't. And that goes for race, that goes for gender, that goes for sexual preference, that goes for gender identity. So many things, like when you're insulated from these people, you, they're just kind of like, it's like looking at them through a glass. But when they're people that you can touch, people that you've hugged, people that have cried with you, or you, you know, someone who can hit you up and say, you know what, I saw this and it really pissed me off. And maybe before that, you never thought that this would be something that upset you, that would upset them. But now you have that, that peek into them actually being a person with feelings, and you're like, oh, this upsets them, and this is why. For someone like Ellen, who is, I'm sure she has like writers and people that she consults and all that, clearly there are not Black people or enough Black people hired at Ellen for her to think that riding a Black man like a donkey is okay. Yeah. Like, this should not be something that has to be explained to you. And people there, but there are other people who are so concerned with, oh, she's our ally. Oh, I like her. Yeah. Oh, she didn't mean. You could kill me with bad, with good intentions. Like, your intentions might be great, but if they're harmful, they're still harmful.
And also, yeah, nobody was coming at Ellen. Like, I looked at a bunch of other people's tweets. I only sent the one, but I looked at a bunch of other people's tweets, and it wasn't like, oh, Ellen's a horrible person. It was like, wow, she probably doesn't have any Black people. Like, people were talking about her staffing. They were talking about how you would avoid these things. Like, that's how we have these conversations.
Yeah, but, and the conversation has to, at some point, continually, I hammer it again and again and again, because white liberals just can't get past this binary fucking good, bad, racist fucking way of looking. And but, Ellen, in their view, is good, and she's not bad, a hooded Klansman racist. So mm-hmm. therefore, nothing she does could vary. Like, they think of racist as a feeling in your heart, right? They think of racist as, I hate Black people. It's like, you can really like be Ellen and quote unquote ally, and you can be, you know, positive in a lot of different ways and do a lot of good when it comes to LGBT, even Black liberation work. You can do all of that and still do fuck ass shit that's mm-hmm. framed with supremacy, because guess what? We're white. We're going to do it. It's not going to make, it doesn't make her bad. It makes her white.
The people who told me I was being sensitive, because I made a comment about hiring Black writers, hiring, you know, hiring Black people, and they're like, oh, we're sensitive. We've gotten so sensitive. I'm like, she's literally writing a Black man. There are several ways. Could have been kissed. Somebody pointed out something very interesting. Like, she could have this, all of this changes if she's in his arms. You know, and not using him as a motorcycle.
It's true. There's actually a way to make that joint, that joke, and it actually land well.
Yeah.
That's so just not the way.
Yeah. So it's not, it's very, it was tone deaf. I don't care what she meant. After a certain point in time, especially, you know, now, some of this, people can, they don't have to be sensitive to certain things. You can tell who hasn't had to be sensitive to certain things, and they don't think about, they don't really care, and they kind of start kind of sniffing their own farts, like, I'm such and such, so, and thinking that they're above reproach. And while it may not necessarily be intentional or completely douchey, it still happens, and I think that's just one of those moments that she had, that she's Ellen, so it was going to be all right for her to say that, and no. No, it's actually not. Okay. And I like Ellen. Yeah. I really do. And that was really fucked up.
And the thing for me is like, and I'm with you. I love Ellen. I don't just like, I love her. I watch her show. Like, I'm not mad at Ellen. Like, and when she did this tweet.
Well, I'm mad at Ellen.
Listen,
now,
when she did the tweet, it was like, okay, I can be, or a lot of people can be disappointed in that. And this for me, like, honestly, like, the roadmap for like white people that are trying to like move from indoctrinated to anti-racist, there's a lot of things that we could learn to do and it would really mm-hmm. help us. One of them as white people is this white fragility, just white fragility. Understand it, learn it, know what you're going to do, the defensiveness, all the fucking horseshit. And Ellen did it. Like, if she had come out right away and just paused, just fucking paused, got some counsel, talked to a few people, really understood the historical context, she could have come out and said, you know what? You know who did this was the who made fun of Zendaya's hair? Juliana Rancic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she sat with that shit for a good 24 hours. She didn't come out right away. And when she did, she came out with, I understand now that my intent doesn't matter. The outcome is that I hurt this young woman's feelings. I understand the historical context of black hair. I have been informed, and I'm embarrassed, and I'm apologetic, and I'll do better. Literally. Ellen could have come out and done the same thing. Could have had a conversation.
And you don't even have to mean it. That's the real...
Yeah, like, you don't even have to mean it.
That's the most...
She could have pandered. She could have been pandering.
You literally can... Like, you should just... Can you pander to us like you do everybody else?
Yeah. When who is she pandering to? The liberal, like, not that hurt racist people? Or... yeah, you're right. She could have pandered. She didn't even have to mean it. She didn't even have to mean it. And then she could have been, you know what? Starting a conversation. Because we white people love doing racist shit and then taking credit for starting the conversation. That's important.
Started the conversation.
But I'm not mad, Ellen. I'm not mad. Like, literally, like, honestly, listen. John, listen. I'm a white dude. I'm married to a black woman. I trust and love her in an implicit way. I still do fuck-ass shit.
I could only imagine because, you can't help it. It's just something that you can't relate to. Mm-hmm. There are things that you did not grow up with. And I think we all, when there are cultural differences, and even like there are things just from growing up in another family, there are things where one thing is totally acceptable in your family and it would cause World War III in her family.
Oh yeah, my family's rude as shit.
The differences between race and whatever else, of course you're gonna say crazy shit. You know my favorite thing to do though when I say something fucked up or I do something fucked up? To say, God damn, that was fucked up. And then just kind of not let it go like, I don't want to deal with it anymore. But don't debate the point. I'm not going to debate with you why it was okay that I did this fucked up thing. I'm not going to debate with you why I did this fucked up thing. It was fucked up. I'm not going to do it again. Keep moving.
When you
start trying to defend your fucked up actions, it's a waste.
But that's the white fragility.
Really sorry.
Yeah, that's white fragility, male fragility, all the fragility. You start double downing and defending. And I honestly... Listen, I'm a, like, put my foot in my mouth motherfucker. Like, I step in it, like, on the reg. Like, on Twitter? Oh, my God. Over the last 2 years, like seriously, if I could run down the list of things that, like, I comported a tweet that, like, kind of in some way was, like, saving the whales and saving black people. Like, it was so bad. Like, I tweeted it, and I was like, whoa, that came out really wrong. And, like, three different people were like, I'm glad you said it, you know? But so the thing that you're talking about, own it, acknowledge it. Vow to do better. That's it. I've done shit where I said something and I was like, whoa. And especially if somebody checks you, first thing I think, I stop for a second and I hear it. And even if I don't understand, if they're checking me in a way that I don't get, I'll come back and ask Leslie later, but I'll be like, wow, I'm sorry. Thanks for letting me know. I'll do better. That's it. Like, whoa, yes, I'm sorry.
I remember, maybe close to a decade ago. I don't know. I said something really dumb. It was like a really dumb trans joke. I think I called a woman trans because she was tall or whatever the fuck. And I got checked on it. And I can see like my first reaction was to be offended. And I can't believe I was just, but that's not like trans people are not your punchline. They're not your punchline. And that's just one of the things. And that could go for any group that is not you. People are not your punchline. There are things, and people have the right to be upset about things that you don't understand.
Mm.
And you just have to move on from that. And take your medicine. Like, if you said some fucked up shit, you don't get to necessarily shake it off. It's something that you put out there, and it extends for however long somebody happens to be hurt by it.
Exactly.
You don't have to let it define you. I mean, you don't have to let people necessarily put their foot in your ass. But at the same time, you don't get to be tired of it because you said it.
Yes.
You did it.
Yeah.
So you still have to own it and accept the fact that this is something that you said and did that hurt someone and just be a better person now.
And these white folk, I'm one of them. We do this like, please, please forgive me. Please tell me I'm not racist. I didn't mean it like that. Please accept my apology. Don't do that.
Yeah, I purposely just don't accept apologies for that reason. So,
and you shouldn't. It may
just
it,
to train them.
Yeah, no, for, because absolutely here's
the
thing,
because that's the general thing is that, and that's very much ingrained into the expectation on Black people from white people, which is that
absolutely
we
forgive
are
right
meant
away.
To forgive you. Yeah. We see this narrative every time somebody gets killed by a police officer or by a white vigilante, and it's like they want the family on TV saying they forgive them. That's what they want. That's the narrative they want out there. That's what they want to hear. And I'm like, fuck that. No, I don't forgive you. Listen, there's consequences to your goddamn actions. Y'all have no problem saying that shit when it's a 18-year-old Black kid on the corner with 5 joints in his pocket. Why the fuck can't we say that about Ellen?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my gosh, this show is going super long. So we're going to skip a few things and we're going to talk about some movies and TV and all of that.
One thing we are going to skip, I'm glad we're skipping.
We'll talk about it another day, Drew, so don't mention it.
Oh, really?
I do want to talk about it because that article is fuck shit as I all get out.
Okay.
We will talk about it. But I wanted to talk about Riri Williams, who has a name fit for a superhero. She is the new Iron Man, but she's going to be called Iron Heart. I actually thought that was a really sweet name. What did you think, Mel?
I love it.
It's so good.
I love it. I'm also already starting the campaign for my daughter, BB, to play really well.
Oh, my God. That'd be so great because all of the people they keep suggesting for her are not appropriate at all. So that's
wonderful. We need BB. BB needs to be Ironheart. So,
I'm here for it.
Like, we really need to make that a hashtag.
So they're calling it Invincible Iron Man number one. It's coming on Marvel. Riri Williams is Ironheart. For those of you who don't know, Riri Williams is now officially the smartest person in the entire Marvel universe. Smarter than Tony Stark. Smarter than Mr. Marvel. Smarter than everybody. She's the smartest one. She's brilliant. And it's super exciting. She has the most amazing hair in the cartoon. I don't know who they have drawing it, but it's really beautiful. Just the way they've drawn her, it's so authentic, like her features and her hair and her skin tone. I just think it's fantastic. Bendis said in an interview that the writer, he said that he and his editors went back and forth on the decision. Iron Woman seemed old-fashioned to some. Iron Maiden looked like a legal nightmare. And Iron Heart, coined by John Quesada after I told him my planned story for Riri, speaks not only to the soul of the character, but to the Iron Man franchise as a whole, which, of course, we know Tony Stark originally became Iron Man because of shrapnel around his heart. So it's a good callback for that. The rest is now history, and another Black girl heroine that we've sorely needed was born. The hype and anticipation for the comic only grows by the day. And I think everyone's just really excited about it. I think it's going to be really cool. Actually, the drawing of her reminded me of, I don't know if you guys have seen Daniel Jose Older's book Shadow Shaper that came out this past year. Amazing book. How old is BB?
BB is 15.
Oh, you should get it for her for sure. It's so amazing. Yeah. It's about a Black girl from Brooklyn, and there's like a supernatural aspect to it. It's fantastic. She'd love it. But the cover of it reminds me of this Riri drawing, but that's going to be really exciting to see, and hopefully we'll see her in other areas too while they're at it. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention was 11 Black-led TV shows and specials that are premiering this fall. Yes, I did say 11. The first is Ringside. Spend Labor Day weekend with the TV One original movie Ringside. Oh, Lord. Tyler Lepley plays a boxer struggling to balance his high-pressure career with his rocky personal life. The film is directed by veteran radio personality Russ Parr and co-stars Jackie Long from ATL, Taquan Richmond, and Servin Streeter. That comes out September 4th, Labor Day. Loosely Exactly Nicole. Nicole Byer from Girl Code stars in Loosely Exactly Nicola, a comedy inspired by her adventures as an actress in Hollywood. Almost every episode features a nugget from her real life. The show also boasts a diverse group of writers. According to Byer, half the writer's room is Black. Good on her for that. Speaking of Black writer's room, writer's room that is completely Black, 100% Black, is Donald Glover's Atlanta, which has been coming for a long time. The show centers on two cousins looking for a come up in Atlanta's competitive rap scene. Glover stars, directs, writes, and executive produced the series, which has one objective: to show people how it feels to be Black. Have you seen the previews for that, Mel? What do you think?
I have not seen the latest preview. I've seen the little teasers, and I am a very weird person. And I was basically tonight going to go through, there are like a few trailers that I want to watch. And that was one of the things, because I've had like a really busy week. And today afterward is going to be like my first night that I get to relax before midnight. So
that's one of the things I'm going to do. Watch the Atlanta trailer.
That's awesome.
And I did not know about the Nicole, what's her? I love her.
I love
her too. She's a kind of chunky girl, right?
Yeah, she's a kind of chunky girl. She's so funny.
She's really funny.
Really, really funny. And not sidekick funny, lead actress.
Absolutely
funny.
Not.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like people pigeonhole comedic actresses so much. And she's like, nope, she's the star. Like, she should be in the front. So it's great to see her getting those roles. And definitely, obviously, employing more black creatives, which is great. Queen Sugar, which I'm very excited about. Follows the estranged Bordelon siblings after tragedy strikes. Nova, played by Rutina Wesley from True Blood, Charlie and Ralph Angel must put their differences aside to run the family sugarcane farm. Creator Anna DuVernay went above and beyond to showcase diversity in front of and behind the camera. Every episode of Queen Sugar was directed by a woman. Now, who says inclusion is hard? You guys can check out hashtag inclusion crew, which showcases. And when they say everybody, there wasn't a white man that worked on this project. From the gaffer to the tape guy to the DP, everybody was either a woman, a person of color, all of that. It's just
hashtag inclusivity crew.
Inclusive crew.
And I love it that it was a, like you said, every single one. For all the people, there's not enough and we can't find it and we can't hire. Okay, whatever, shut up.
So specifically, all the women, all the directors were women, quite a few black women. And one thing that came out today was that all of the directors of the first season of Queen Sugar have already booked additional directing jobs on television again. All of them, from Nima Barnett, who's going to be directing Being Mary Jane this year, Tanya Hamilton, who's going to be directing The Vampire Diaries and American Crime, So-Young Kim, who is going to be directing also American Crime and also the comedy anthology Room 104 on HBO, Tina Mabry, who I love, is going to be directing an American Girl movie for Amazon streaming. Sally Richardson Whitfield, calm down, Drew. I know that's your girl. She is going to be directing the Freeform drama series Shadowhunters. Victoria Mahoney is going to be doing Grey's Anatomy, American Crime, Netflix's Gypsy, and Stars Power and Survivor's Remorse. And Kat Chandler, who is going to be doing something called Hellion. So when you see these female directors getting opportunity and you see it leading to more and more work, honestly, I can't say enough about Ava, but today's her birthday, so let's give her an extra shout out, give her a few dinks, because I have yet to see somebody who's come into the entertainment industry with a goal of completely changing the landscape. I don't think we've seen somebody like this since Richard Pryor in terms of their true impact to what the perception is of what you can do as a black person, much less a black woman in this industry. I'm in
breaking
awe.
Molds, like, breaking truly, ceilings, breaking
like
everything.
I don't even know what to say. So shout out to you, Ava.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to just say, Sally, I'm glad
you're
buying
the car. I just told you to pipe down about Sally because just enough. You're upset.
I have a funny story about her.
Oh, my God, really?
Tell it.
Well, not necessarily her personally. It really has to do with one of my oldest friends from high school selling me out. So we were talking about the Cosby Show back before we knew completely what Bill Cosby was. And I think we were talking about how terrible his children were. And
his real children? This would be clear.
The show children.
The show children, got it.
And I started talking about Vanessa and how awful, awful Robert was. And what? One of my friends, in a fit of madness, decides to at Sally Richardson. Mm-mm. And the next thing I know, I got Dondre Whitfield in my mentions.
No.
Feeling like a bad person. Yes.
No.
What?
Yes.
First of all, I'm a little hurt because I love Robert. That was my, I had a big crush on Robert. So.
He was so
wholesome. He loved her.
He was so pitiful. He was so much. He was so. He really did way too much for Vanessa, who didn't really want.
Vanessa was the worst, though. I think she
was terrible.
She was a terrible. She always did the worst stuff. Like, they were always so on Denise, and I was like, but Vanessa is doing worse shit right here, right now. Why y'all picking on Denise for?
She treated Robert like shit. Mm-mm. And he was too dumb to go away.
She treated, what was her best friend's name? She treated her like shit too all the time.
She treated all her friends like shit. Vanessa got all her friends in trouble.
All the time.
Would always leave them holding the bag. Like, she was the worst. She was the worst. And I totally victim blamed Robert.
Oh, poor Robert. We have a few more. The new Lethal Weapon remake. I'm not going to go too much into that. Damon Wayans is one of the stars. He stars as Roger Murtaugh and some random dude, Martin Riggs. Plays Martin Riggs.
It actually looks pretty good.
It looks okay. I'm hoping that they focus on the psychological piece and not the action, because I feel like that's interesting. But we'll see. It's Fox. I don't know. We'll see. This one,
I have diplomatic immunity.
True, you're a mess.
Has just been revoked.
It's been revoked.
So great.
Twitch of the neck. A classic Danny Glover. This one I'm super excited for. Actually, Mel, maybe you'd be interested in doing... I'm trying to get a few black women together to do a review of this show, which is Pitch. It's going to be coming on Fox September 22nd. It kicks off. And who runs the world, girls? Pitch is Ginny Baker, played by Kylie Burnberry, is about to make history as the first female pitcher in Major League Baseball. Viewers follow her struggle of going from relative unknown to sports icon. The series co-stars my boy, Mark Paul Gosselaar, Zach Morris, to all of you, Mo McRae from Sons of Anarchy, and Michael Beach from The 100. I've heard nothing but really great things about it, and it's a black girl, so hands up for that. And I'm hoping to get a few black women together to review it, because I just think it's going to be really good.
I would follow Mark Paul Gosselaar into the flames.
Listen, don't get me started about Zach Morris. Don't.
Oh, my goodness.
Just don't. Secrets and Lies. Why do they keep giving Michael Ealy series?
They want... He's fetch.
Like, I don't understand it. How many shows is he going to tank? It's like 20 series now.
Who does he have a picture of fucking a goat?
His agent must be a mirror. Is Chris Jenner managing him? I'm starting to think that must be the only answer to these questions. Because somehow him and Morris Chestnut stay working.
And to be fair, I don't think he's terrible. I just don't.
He was good playing that robot. Oops.
Yeah, I loved him in that movie. That Fox show. I'm not saying he's wooden.
I was very disappointed when
me
that
too. I fucking love that shit. I thought it was good.
That was the greatest role for him.
He finally found a role he could play.
It was high budget and high. Good. You know, it was good.
They should have gave it at least.
I kind of liked him when he was the terrorist thing in the HBO one.
It was
one.
All right for one season.
Yeah, I said kinda. I said kinda. But he has a robot. He was golden.
This one we're super excited for, of course. Marvel's Luke Cage, Netflix coming back at us on September 30th. God, it's just a month of fucking way. Luke Cage will bring Harlem to the forefront of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mike Coulter's Luke Cage is the only thing standing between his neighborhood and crime boss Cornell Cottonmouth Stokes, played by Mahershala Ali from House of Cards and also the 4400, for those of you that watched that show. Thanks to music journalist turned showrunner Cho Hadari Choker, Luke Cage is infused with legit hip-hop flavor, including each of their titles being the title of a Gangstar song. So that is a little tidbit for you. Cast includes Alfre Woodard, Simone Missick, Theo Rusty, and Rosaria Dawson, who was in Daredevil and also had a brief cameo in Jessica Jones. I also think there's going to be some overlap between the Luke Cage and the next season of Daredevil. So there'll be some crossover.
You know, we talked on our show, I think it was Chris or Deepom, I don't know who we were talking about, but said that they thought that was the blackest show or the blackest preview they've ever seen. And I don't know if it's the blackest this or that, but I feel like you can tell with Luke Cage and some of the Marvel properties when they not necessarily have the right or enough black people, but they're not allowing like the quote unquote white gaze to kind of fuck shit up. You know what I'm saying? Like there isn't somebody who's white and is a yes, you know, all these people are going, yes, boss, and that person's making decisions. I feel like, I don't know if DC's gotten to that point yet. I don't know if other people have gotten to that point. Marvel's awesome.
I just saw Suicide Squad and they're still pantomiming blackness.
Kinda.
No, they are. When you have to put a gold chain to signify an ethnicity, that's not, you're not doing your work well. But I think the thing about Marvel that I found really good is that they recognize that each of their properties requires different treatment. I don't think DC has really understood that yet. You know, it doesn't need to be cohesive over the course of it. You want the quality to be cohesive, but each of these stories is their own flavor, their own tone, their own look, their own everything. And I mean, you Marvel have to treat them that way.
Period pieces. Like
that's what I mean.
Yeah, Marvel does a lot
of
different
shit. They understand that there needs to be that sort of thing. I mean, Jessica Jones couldn't be more different than
Daredevil.
They're not just the same universe. They're the same fucking city.
Yeah.
Okay, but they understand it has to look different.
Yeah.
Issa Rae's Insecure starts October 9th on HBO, if you guys get that. It's about to go from the internet darling to bona fide TV. Sorry, the actress, writer, and producer headlines Insecure, an HBO comedy partially based on her popular web series, The Misadventures of Aqua Black Girl.
Listen.
She co-created the show with Larry Wilmore, who is no longer on the Nightly Show.
That Awkward Black Girl, like that. I'm not saying like go watch the web series, but I fucking loved it. I've watched it forever.
You just love it because she ended up with White Jay.
I'm White Jay. Yo, I'm White Jay.
I am not Issa Rae.
I'm aware.
Rocky Horror Picture Show is going to be on Fox. One of this new trend of live actual musicals, which I think is interesting. But Laverne Cox is slipping on Dr. Frankenfurter's Fishnets and will headline the show. Little story I really appreciate about that. Adam Lambert got offered that job.
Oh.
And he turned it down. He said, I'm not trans. You need a trans person to play this role now.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I was like, yes, Lambert, do it.
Because we need more reasons to love Adam Lambert.
Word. I love that boy. And lastly, People of Earth, comedian, writer Wyatt Senek from The Daily Show is on a space case. In People of Earth, he plays Ozzy, a journalist investigating a support group for alien inductees. Yes, that's the entire premise. Expect a talking deer, shadowy figures, and green men to make an appearance. It's a sci-fi comedy that fully embraces its weirdness. It also co-stars Anna Gasteyer, who I love, Oscar Nunez from The Office, and Divine Joy Randolph from Ghost the Musical. And that's starts on TBS on October 31st, and you have now been fully informed about all the blackness coming at us. I mean, none of this goes beyond October, so this is all stuff coming right up. What of those are you most excited about, Mel?
I would say that I am... Shit, there's so much. I'm definitely excited about Luke Cage. Mm. I'm a big Marvel fan.
Yeah.
I love comic shit in general, but I'm a big... I love what Marvel has done. When you think about how before it was like there's the movie universe here and there's the what's good for TV there, and they don't necessarily coincide, and they've not only integrated everything, but like you said, everything has its own flavor and it's still complete. I love it. So mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to Luke Cage. Shit, I'm forgetting something. I want to see that pitch thing. I didn't even know that was a thing.
But that looks cool.
It looks really well.
I hope they do it well.
Yeah. It almost looks like ESPN, like the way that the look
30-30
of it.
Yeah.
So it looks really cool. I think it'll be interesting.
I'm definitely also looking to Luke Cage. I think that's going to be fucking phenomenal.
I'm looking forward to ATL. I've missed, even though he ain't shit, I missed Donald Glover on TV.
I think that's going to be the thing that I'm really, going to sink my teeth into, because it just looks like it's going to be great.
Yeah, it looks like it's really going to be authentically black, and I think that's going to be great to see on television.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Issa with a little bit more money too in the production.
Yeah, it should be interesting to see that.
Here, I'll play this for you. Because
white guy fetish, because I be feeling the white guys too. Don't sleep.
Don't sleep.
You and Lily.
Don't sleep.
Drew and Lily from SWV had a little Twitter situation because of that clip. He put it on Vine and was tagging everybody.
Don't sleep.
And she was like, yeah.
Don't sleep.
I'm watching you, Drew. well, thanks again, Mel, for joining us. It's as always been great.
Thank you, first of all.
Tell everybody where they can find you and a little bit again about the new show that starts on Monday.
All right. Once again, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at @beauty_Jackson. Please say the underscore. You can find me. I'm blogging again, which I did not talk about early on, but I'm blogging at redbeandreams.com. And I'm having a lot of fun doing that. That was basically my introduction to the internet many, many moons ago, or being like visible on the internet. So it feels so good to be writing again and be blogging again. And the new show, you can find all our shows on cspn.us, and you can find my new show, Super Luscious, on Monday mornings, bright and early. It's going to be great. We're going to be talking about all the shit you love
And if you think that there's something that we should be talking about that I haven't covered, then you can email me at beautyjackson@redbeandreams.com and maybe you can be a guest on the show and we can talk about it.
Awesome. Who is this person that has beauty not underscore Jackson?
Somebody in Cape Town? I want to say they're in South Africa or somewhere crazy like that.
They only follow 21 people, man.
Yeah.
They need to get it.
Yeah, and I've tried getting them spammed out of there and all that. And you know what? I just own the underscore.
Yes.
Because
there
are other places I didn't have to use the underscore.
But you did.
On Instagram or Snapchat, but you know what? I own the underscore.
That's right. That's you.
And mostly because people like that. I hate when people have underscores in their name. Why do you give a fuck?
Yeah, why do
you? You're going to at me and the shit is going to be hot. So.
Whatevs. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's always a fun time.
Such a great time.
You're going to have to come and hang out with me on Superluscious.
Anytime. I'll be there. You know it. Anytime.